Hello, everyone. This is the one and only NXT superstar Ricochet, and you are listening to Skip to the End podcast. Bam.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 99 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And tonight we're going to party like it's episode 99.
I was not prepared for that.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Amazing. We're so close now. I can smell episode 100. It's literally 2 weeks away.
I know.
Wow.
We better start prepping, guys. We need to deliver the goods.
Yeah, it can't just be another crappy run-of-the-mill episode that we churn out these days.
I kind of like the idea of that, though. Everyone's anticipating what they're going to do, what competition prizes, what topic, and we just do a standard, really half-hearted, low-energy episode.
No celebrations, no nothing.
We don't do that here at Skip to the End.
No, we don't give a shitty job. So, Mark, what have we got coming up on the episode?
Well, our main review this time round is Hereditary, and it's been getting some rave reviews out there, and it's a horror. So, Ben, it's out of your comfort zone, and I'm very intrigued what you're going to think to that.
Yeah, we'll see. I've got a few notes.
Did you just... Already?
That couldn't have been me.
Who was that there? Who the hell was that?
Oh, my God. Oh my
I'm
God.
Freaked out.
Our rewatch is a big un. The Western classic... The good, the bad, and the ugly. This is not in my comfort zone, basically. So I'm a little bit... Obviously, I'm always interested in what you guys have got to say, but I'm sure everybody's going to be interested in what I have to say.
Oh, arrogant. Like that? Arrogant.
She does. She's quite interested in what me and you have to say. The people that hired her.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
You're rude.
Wow.
And our topic of conversation is top three performers who need a comeback. Those actors and actresses who, for whatever reason, have fallen off the radar and deserve to be brought back into the spotlight.
And on this episode, we're going to be jacking off to Jack Nicholson. And then I think, Gemma, this is quite a big moment for you, as he's one of your favourites.
I'm all jacked out.
Nice.
We're going to be doing a quiz, a one-off quiz on episode 99 called Quiz to the End.
Quiz to the End, the
quiz
number two.
Quiz to the End.
Yes.
We're going to be asking each other questions about our time since episode 51 to now. Mm-hmm. So going to be some good old questions there, but are we going to get them? This is the real quiz.
This is the real quiz indeed. And we'll also be giving you all the usual things you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. We'll give you some fantastic prizes and a whole bunch of other shit. I couldn't be bothered specifying.
Just loads.
Just general shit. And I want to get into that shit right now. Let's get started. Our topic of conversation this time round, top three performers who need a comeback. As I said in the intro, actors and actresses who were big stars at one point, but for some reason their star has fallen, but we think they deserve to be brought back into the spotlight. Gemma, I'm going to throw it out to you first. Who's your first pick?
My first pick is Brendan Fraser.
I got him too.
Have you?
Yes!
Wow.
High bloody five. Whenever I think of him, I always think of him as either California Man or Encino Man in some areas of the world.
Yeah.
The Mummy, George of the Jungle, and I just remember him having this real sense of fun about him. He was always really charismatic, but he had these dashing good looks that you would often see in sort of the golden age of Hollywood in the 1930s and the 1940s. I friggin' love him as Rick in The Mummy, and it's a travesty he got remade with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Not good at all, but he had sort of this real swashbuckling sense of humour about him. The reason why we don't really see him as much as we do now is all because of his stunt work. He did a lot of his own stunts in a lot of films, especially in the Mummy trilogy. And after the third one, it was reported he said that he was being held back with ice and tape. So it caused him a lot of damage to his body. So he was in and out of hospitals. And as of such, his career subsequently suffered from it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's a real sad story. And also we've had claims of sexual abuse from higher bigwigs in Hollywood. It doesn't make pretty reading. But the good news is, he's coming back. He's coming back to TV screens. He's on a Fox TV show called Trust. So I think we're going to start seeing a bit of an incline in his popularity. And I really hope so. He's such a fun guy to watch.
He's been getting really good reviews for Trust
he
as
has.
Well. People are saying he's excellent.
Yeah.
In the 90s, he was up there. He was up there with Affleck, Brad Pitt, sort of Matt Damon. He was a huge, huge name. And the thing is, he can do serious as well. Do not get me wrong. This film should have been called Gash. But Crash... he showed a serious side, didn't he?
I was wondering where you were going with that.
But he was a good... He shows that he can do the more serious performance and The Quiet American. Good films. But The Comedy Man, California Man, was amazing. Mm-hmm. He should have been doing films like Mike Myers at that time for another 10, 15 years. I also read he went through a really bad divorce. So that kind of crippled him financially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an even better reason to get back in the game. That's why people like Bruce Willis and... John Travolta doing any old shit now because they need to pay off their bunts for their missuses or ex-missuses.
Well.
But I miss that guy, man. He's great. And he's coming back, then brilliant. But let's get him on the big screen. Let's go and see him at the cinema again.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, if the reviews are as good or his performance is as good in Trust as they say, maybe we will. Maybe we'll see him
fingers
again.
Crossed.
Yeah.
I hope so. I miss him.
What a start. You've already had my first choice. So it's Ben.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going with a big one. Nicolas Cage.
Not the best!
Yeah, Nicolas Cage, back in the day, made some genuinely great films, like Raising Arizona, Leaving Las Vegas, Adaptation. He also made really fucking silly films that were also great. Con Air, The Rock, Face Off. He's a two-time Oscar nominee. But now he spends his time kung fu kicking women in the face in shit like The Wicker Man. You know what I mean? Or paying off his tax bill with straight-to-DVD bullshit like Army of One, co-starring Russell Brand.
That's a great film.
Or Inconceivable, co-starring atrocious former WWE wrestler Eva Marie. Have you seen that one?
Has anyone?
Jesus Christ. Paul saw it. I don't know why Paul watched it. I need to ask him. But it's not great.
No.
He's just such a cool and exciting actor. On it, or at least he was. And I think he needs to bring that to more modern roles, big screen roles. To me, he is a perfect Tarantino actor. Couldn't you just imagine him being a washed-up criminal or a hitman or something in a Tarantino film?
Absolutely.
That's the thing. When you give him the actual space and time and budget, like we saw in Kick-Ass when he came back, I thought he's back for good. Oh, nope. Yeah. He then went and did another 20 straight-to-Tesco DVD bargain bin titles.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm.
So he teases us. But no, it's a shame, dude. I want to see him with a proper person that's going to spend the time and direct him properly.
Yeah.
Because he's just allowed to do what he wants right now.
Because he has genuinely got a tax bill to pay.
And his hairline, that must cost money.
That's the weirdest hairline in movie history, isn't it?
Top three hairlines, next topic. That's a great one, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, go to Tesco next time. If you're listening now, go to Tesco, go to Sainsbury's, go to Asda. You know those ones that are like two for a fiver?
Yeah.
Look at some of the covers. You won't have heard them before, but it's like The Last Train Home and The Man in the Woods. He'll do any of them. You make up a title, you're not too far off some of the films he's done. Shocking. Back around already.
Yeah, my second go. So my second one is Bill Pullman.
Oh, lovely.
Nice.
Most known as the greatest fictional American president in the land with Independence Day, the sweetest dad in Casper the Friendly Ghost, and another person who has had no idea what was going on in David Lynch's Lost Highway. Seriously, he looked confused as hell, and so did I. But he was a reliably good actor to watch and be immersed with. He had an everyman personification about him, which was really relatable and easy to engage when you're watching him. And he had a very kind and trustworthy face. I like his face. Big fan of his face.
He's got a lovely face.
He really does. If there was like a lineup of faces, he'd be the first one I go to and I go, yes, your face.
Not Rolf Harris.
He continued to work... So when you do see his IMDb profile, he does a lot of small roles, like really kind of like the Nick Cage route. He doesn't really do massive great big films. Uh-huh. However, he came back as a tour de force in The Sinner on Netflix.
So good.
Which we were all massive fans of. So I'm hoping this is going to be now reflected into his movie career moving forward. And I just hope that it shows that he's still a bankable star on the big screen as well as on Netflix and TV.
He's, when I think of him, I just think of reliable.
Yes.
He's just Mr. Reliable. You're never let down by him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a nice thing to say about someone.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
He's very reliable.
Yeah. You're on time, you're punctual, well done.
I'm waiting for a dig.
Genuine.
But the fact we got him on Netflix in The Sinner and everyone was talking about him up there as high as Jessica Biel, everyone wasn't just talking about her, they were talking about him, does give you hope. And surely he'll be in season two.
He is,
brilliant.
He will kick season two in the dick. That's how good he is.
That should be the tagline for the show.
Yeah. Netflix, if you actually put this out next week as the trailer and it says kick in the dick, we're suing you.
Big time.
I'm really hoping now that none of you have this. It's a questionable one. It could happen.
Go on.
John Cusack.
I've got it too.
Yes! This guy is an amazing actor. We've seen him in Gross Point Blank, High Fidelity, Say Anything, some good films.
Being John Malkovich.
Oh, God. Yeah. What an unbelievable film. Did you know in 2014 to 2015, he released 11 different films?
How? Wow.
But you must have known this because some of them are Dragon Blade, The Carrier Man, which is also known as The Bag Man in America,
right.
Or Drive Hard. So, you know, big hits. Oscar contenders right there. He is a good actor. He's done The Cell with Stephen King, and I thought that was all right, but he still looks like he's got a big tax bill to pay off, or a divorce or something, or a drug habit, because he's allegedly... Well,
Claims.
Because he's doing any old shit. He's doing the Bruce Willis, the Nick Cage route, and he shouldn't, because he's better than that, and we've seen him put his heart and soul into good films. They're classics. Gross Point Blank is one of the best films of all time.
Yeah, it's amazing, and I will be bringing it as a rewatch very soon.
Excellent. Woo! He's also great in Identity.
Yes. There's a number of films that he's great in, but he's also shite in a lot of stuff, and I wouldn't even watch half of these. I mean, I am quite intrigued by The Bag Man. I mean, The Carrier, it's called. Yeah, that's pretty good. But Ben, you know, tell me as well, it's a shame, isn't it?
It's a damn shame, because in my opinion, he's one of the greatest actors of his generation. I think he's absolutely phenomenal. He's a Golden Globe nominee, and it's really upsetting that he does straight-to-DVD shite like a film called Arsenal, co-starring Nicolas Cage. And The Prince, co-starring another actor going through a premature career death, Bruce Willis.
Oh,
so he's doing them all. And I love his work because he's such a soulful performer. And I think he perfected the art of being the everyman, the average Joe. You can always empathise with him because he feels like you, he feels like one of us. Even in Gross Point Blank when he's playing a hitman, he does it like a regular guy. He never feels like a caricature.
Yeah.
And I don't know what caused his star to fall. Like with Nicolas Cage, we know it's the tax bill. But I don't know what caused Cusack's star to fall. One minute he's a big name making great movies, and the next minute he's churning out unwatchable shite for beer money. I don't know how this happened.
What beer do you think he's trying to save up for? I'm thinking Peroni.
Peroni.
Ooh. That would be nice. Because you wouldn't do these sort of films for Carling Extra Cold. Like
or
Foster's.
No, definitely not.
It needs to be the pure brand.
Yeah.
But I'd jack all them in and buy cider.
Which
cider? What cider would you go?
Well, Brother Cider, guys. That's
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cling, cling.
Here's to the man himself, John Cusack's tasting cider. So where were you?
Oh, tasty.
Dancing on the taste buds.
Where were we?
I don't know. I'm just drinking now.
But yeah, John Cusack used to be good and now he's not. And I want him to come back because there is someone out there that will give him a chance again because he's proved himself.
Yeah.
So give him all the money, give him the budget, give him whatever he needs.
Give him all drugs, the
money. All the money.
And clear us out. Bankrupt us.
Get him back on screen because no one wants to see Drive Hard. No one does.
Yeah.
Even though that could be a future rewatch.
So my last one. I've gone for Juliette Lewis.
Fucking hell, I've got her too.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yes.
Great shout.
Oh, she has a beautiful rebellion air about her. She never conforms to what Hollywood has in mind. She's a true self, and she's mirrored this in so many ways of her body of work. So, for me, the most memorable role she's ever done, Natural Born Killers, is Mallory Knox.
Yep.
But she's also done some killer roles, such as California and From Dusk Till Dawn. But for me, Mallory Knox, she was fearless, yet she was vulnerable at the same time. And I think this is why I love Juliette Lewis so much. She kind of took a step back in the mid-2000s because she bought out a band called Juliette and the Licks.
Mm.
And they broke up probably about 5 years after they introduced themselves onto the main stage. But then she came back a few years ago in the frustrating Wayward Pines. Very frustrating show, but she was arguably the best character. But she was in it for only about 3 or 4 episodes. Mm. She had so much of an arc, and yet somehow she was cruelly killed off during that season.
Spoiler alert.
Never mind. Don't worry. It's cancelled. No one's going to watch it. It's fine. But I really miss her swagger and the fact that she didn't want to be this generic Hollywood actress type person. She was just great. She's iconic. And I can't wait to see her when she comes back. Come on, Juliet. I'm calling you. Come back.
She will be listening.
Always.
100%.
So. Please come back.
She's worked with Martin Scorsese, Woody Allen, Oliver Stone, Tarantino. Mm-hmm. That's not bad.
Not bad at all.
Mm-hmm. I think she probably is looking, thinking, maybe I could get involved with Spielberg or someone, get that final tick, or Chris Nolan. That's the sort of casting I want to see. But my God, this person can act. And Whip It was the last time I saw in something decent, which is about nine or ten years ago.
Yeah.
And that was a good film, and that was reminding me that she can still act. I follow her on Instagram and she still does a lot of music. She's singing, she's going on tour. Mm. She's dating the drummer from Rage Against the Machine. And them
Brad
two,
Wilk.
Yeah, they've been together.
Is it Brad Wilk or is he the bassist?
Someone.
No, it is Brad Wilk. Tim Cromer's the bassist.
Yeah, so them two have been going for a couple of years and they're kind of helping each other on tour. And he does actually drum for a project now. So if she's doing music like Corey, that's fine.
Always.
You know, do that for a bit, then come back. Because
yeah.
I don't want her just to be a former child actor. I want her to be an adult actor and give us what she does. Because From Dusk Till Dawn, she's adorable. Amazing. She puts up with some absolute dirty, scummy Tarantino in that film. Yeah. He is a... That's too close to the bone for me. I don't think he's acting. It's a bit creepy, isn't it?
Incredibly creepy.
Yeah, very true.
I'm not going to say the line that he says.
Please don't.
No, don't. If you want to know it, go and watch the film. Yeah, she's amazing in that. She's unbelievable in Natural Born Killers. Such a stone-cold badass. Mm-hmm. This tiny little woman, and you believe she could beat the living piss out of you.
Yeah.
Beat the living piss.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do to someone. They beat the living piss out of you.
And then she'll like turn it around and go, kiss my piss.
Nice. And then she'll be in the cemetery of piss. Thank you.
Don't thank her.
You realise that cemetery piss have had more promotion on this podcast than in their entire careers anywhere else, don't you?
I know, it's not good. I saw someone actually check them out on Twitter and were listening, saying listening after us. I forgot who it was, but they had done a screenshot of their iPhone listening to them. And I thought, well, if we've doubled their listener base, that's awesome.
Yeah, now
that's,
two people listen
yes,
to them.
Yes, it's good. Come on then, Ben, finish me off.
Eddie Murphy.
Oh! He went there!
Whoa.
He went from one of the most successful stand-up comedians on the planet to one of the most successful actors on the planet. He made a string of successful adult comedies like Trading Places, Coming to America and Beverly Hills Cop. But then, inexplicably, he decided to become a children's entertainer. He did. He started making kiddie crap like The Nutty Professor, Daddy Daycare and The Adventures of Pluto Nash. Pluto Nash. Pluto Gash.
Corbin, you know what I mean? Nash.
Oi, leave Corbin Nash out of it.
How
Oi,
dare
don't,
you?
Don't even start. He briefly recently tried to reinvent himself as a serious actor with a well-received role in Dreamgirls, but foolishly, he buggered his own Oscar push when he released Norbit in the same year, and that kind of put the voters off a little bit. He really was the funniest, most charming man on the planet at one point, but whenever you see him now, it looks like someone shat in his cornflakes. I don't know what, he just seems so goddamn miserable now.
I think he came off loads of drugs, saw the poster for Norbit and went, did I really fucking do that? How high was I to do that?
Because allegedly.
But you know what I mean? There's no way that he did that completely conscious, clear-headed. Oh yeah, I'll sign up for that.
I have to believe it's just a case that the movie studios are driving a truck full of money up to his front door and saying, here you go, Eddie, do some more shit.
Or the possibility that nobody got to say no around him. He was so used to people saying yes that when this idea was contrived, too many people went, oh, okay.
That's what happened with Jimmy Savile.
So that's Savile and Rolf Harris, for those of you accounting.
In under 15 minutes.
If you're playing pedo bingo at home.
One more and you're nearly there, full house.
Oh my.
Right.
So back to Eddie Murphy then.
Yeah.
So he was amazing. If you go back and look at his old career history, it was astounding, this run of amazing films that he did. And then it just kind of dropped off a cliff. There was no gradual decline. It was just great, 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 shite. I do not know what precipitated that. I don't know how that happened or why. But I still think he could do it. I genuinely believe he could come out the box with a great performance.
Yeah. I always remember him from Raw. His comedy special.
Oh, amazing. And Delirious.
Oh, my God. With, like, the full red leather jacket and trousers. And he looked like such a stone-cold badass.
Yeah.
I was watching Film 4 the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And Shrek was on.
Yeah.
And I forgot how iconic his voice is. And as soon as you see Donkey, that go past pretty good.
Did Donkey come from Cumbria? Yeah.
But that was a great performance. But he hasn't done anything for about 5 years, dude.
Really?
Shame.
I've heard he's going to be doing a Netflix film soon.
I heard this too.
You know, Adam Sandler, that worked for him. Fucking hell. Why didn't no one have him? Or Corey.
Can't answer that. Cause, well, because Corey's still at the top of his game,
he
mate.
Is.
Yeah.
Hashtag fell for
I know.
Piece of shit.
Should we go to social media? Because I think we need saving here.
Let's. So we're going to go to Twitter first. Joey in Housewares, at Joey_Dollar, said, Brendan Fraser, John Cusack, and Mike Myers.
Yeah, big time.
Now, Mike Myers is actually in a TV show over in America, The Gong Show, and he's dressed himself up as this completely different person. It is so weird, but it's so genius at the same time.
Yeah.
I think one of the episodes recently had him as this TV host and him as Mike Myers. Go check it out. Google it, YouTube it. It's hilarious.
Sounds weird.
He deserves better than being a game show host,
doesn't he? He does indeed. Steve Green at Shadow_Chaser said Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah, they both of those retired ages ago when they were still good. Why did they retire so soon? Mm.
And Rick Moranis.
Of course.
Fish, hashtag FBPE, that's bad for the fish, said Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, stick around. She's coming back in Halloween.
Yeah, and Jodie Foster's in Hotel Artemis, which we're going to be reviewing very soon.
Come on. And her third choice was Kathleen Turner.
amazing. I've just watched some of the episodes of Friends where Kathleen Turner plays Chandler's dad.
Yeah. Hello, darling. Nice impression.
Yeah, thank you. Kind of not as good as your, you know, as your donkey impression.
That's a one-off. You're not getting that again.
Shame. Fran at Fran Elizabeth said Janine Garofalo.
Yes, I love Janine Garofalo.
Eddie Murphy and Kevin Kline.
Yeah. He was another one of those, like, Mr. Reliable in the kind of 80s and 90s. Yeah. The thing like Fish Called Wanda and stuff like that.
That's right. And then over to Facebook. So we got Darren Wadsworth said Juliette Lewis.
Yep.
Uma Thurman.
Yeah, she still sort of knocks around but doesn't do anything big.
Yeah. No.
We want you back, girl. And Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah. Sister Act 5 or whatever the
fuck. That's what we need. The sister's back again. That's something Nicolas Cage would get involved in. He'd beat her up.
You know he'd smack her in the face. He'd be a priest. That's horrible. Just beating the hell out of her. Simon Williams said Ted Danson.
He's in The Good Place.
Yeah. He is in The Good Place.
He's doing very good. Well, killing it.
Season 2 soon.
Three.
September, August? August, September?
That, sooner the better.
It's very, very soon. He also said Jim Carrey and Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Jim Carrey's got a sitcom coming out soon on Showtime in the US where he plays like a children's TV entertainer who has a breakdown or something. It looks really interesting.
Oh dear.
I think it's going to be great. Then finally, Jay Ifold said Brendan Fraser, Christian Slater.
Mr. Robot.
He's Mr. Robot, yeah.
And Emilio Estevez.
Yeah, I'll give him that.
Where is he? Where
some
is
great
he?
Ones on social media this time.
Yeah. A lot of love for Brendan Fraser.
Yeah. Oh, and rightfully so too.
And you know what power we have? It will be announced next week. California Man 2.
Fingers crossed.
In a cave.
So thank you for your input, guys, and keep them coming.
That was a really short topic for us.
Yeah, it was.
So we might have to do a bit longer on the rest of the show. We've got to work extra hard. It's my topic for the next one, and it's quite a weird one. I think we're going to have to delve quite deep. You know when you're sitting watching a film and you're really enjoying it, and this one moment happens that just ruins the whole thing? You're furious. You're like, I can't believe that happened, and it ruined a good film for you. So we're going to come back with our top three moments within a film that completely ruined a good movie for you.
Amazing.
Okay.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see the film Hereditary. When Ellen passes away, her daughter's family begin to unravel cryptic and increasingly terrifying secrets about their ancestry. The more they discover, the more they find themselves trying to outrun the sinister fate that they seem to have inherited. As always, we'll be discussing the plot of this film in great detail, so expect a number of spoilers and don't say we didn't warn you. Beep, beep, beep. That's your official spoiler warning that we're now adding on.
I thought that was a truck reversing. I was like, oh God, we better get out of the way.
If you haven't, go and watch it and then come back. We even put the timings in. This takes quite a while. Ben does this hardcore every episode. We put the timings in so we don't ruin it for you. We make it that easy, so stop moaning.
Who's moaning?
Someone moaned the other day.
God bless.
But anyway, everyone else, we love you. So let's get straight to the review of Hereditary. Ben, I'm going to throw it to you first because Gemma is a big lover of horror and you aren't. So what did you think of Hereditary?
I thought it was very, very well made horseshit. It is utter, utter nonsense and one of the silliest films I have ever seen. Garbage.
Very well made horseshit. Gemma.
Okay. There are clear influences of Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist. It definitely has one of the most disturbing and terrifying single scenes I've ever seen. It's really well shot, it's very art house, but it's very frustrating.
So you're both kind of on the same page, really.
Yeah, kinda.
I'm with you. I am. I felt frustrated because it got built up. If they were doing an MTV series of Catfish, this trailer should be the number one voted Catfish of all time. Because I thought I was going into a terrifying horror with loads of jumps and scares that was going to be something like The Exorcist, and it wasn't. It was more of a psychological thriller with elements of bloody Donnie Darko. It was weird, and it was not sold to me what it said. So I want my money back, first of all. That's where I'm furious. Yeah. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed parts of it. And like you said, the sound design and the way it looked and the cinematography for his debut is mind-blowing.
Yeah, we'll cover the technical merits later on, but the film itself, it wasn't remotely scary or thrilling or any of the other things that a horror movie is supposed to be. I think there could have been an interesting film there, dealing with loss and grief and maybe even mental illness, but then they go down the fucking devil-worshipping route.
I completely agree.
So silly, so dumb.
I completely agree. I like that they were focusing on that whole element of Toni Collette's character, Annie, experiencing two different types of grief. When her mother passes away, she's very numb. She doesn't really know how to react. But when, spoiler, her small child, Charlie, gets, you know, a head lopped off in a car accident, the amount of grief that we see is almost maniacal. It's completely the opposite side of the spectrum. But you're right. It was just grab a piece of paper, scrunch it all up, throw it away in the bin. It went a completely different route that didn't really link the whole story together.
Yeah, the ending for me was so frustrating. I was enjoying it. I was sitting there. It didn't matter that it didn't work. The story wasn't great. I was still enjoying it. I was thinking, this is very different. I'm liking the technical stuff. I'm enjoying it. It's all right. The ending was shy.
So stupid.
And not one person I spoke to said, oh, I love the ending. No. Or it's like they just went, oh, fuck it, just whatever.
Yeah.
If prior to going into the film, someone would have said to me that this was a spoof demonic possession movie, I'd have believed them.
Yep.
Because there were so many things during this that I just started chuckling and I had to stifle laughter. I heard the woman sat to Gemma's left also laughing at a couple of things as well. Yeah. So I was like, it's not just me out on a ledge here. But the whole seance scene, you know, when she becomes the daughter, that is so fucking stupid. I was just trying my best not to cry with laughter at that. That was so dumb. The old naked people at the end.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that about?
No one needs that old man's cock.
Yeah, when the old man's cock just appears in the doorway. Yeah. I had to laugh. This is supposed to be a scary moment. It was hilarious. But the line that sums up for me how stupid and how unintentionally funny this film is when the lad says to his mum, "You tried to pull my head off!"
You did it better there, dude.
Yeah. Jesus
Hollywood
Christ.
Will be calling.
Awful, awful film.
I was thinking, I didn't go and see this film with these guys, and I was thinking, Ben's going to be furious. Like, he's going to be sitting in the cinema, literally ready to rip up the seat when this film ends. Because I saw it before you, and I was going to text her, and maybe we should change the review. Like, Incredible 2's is out. You know, we could look at something else, but let's try and pick on the good stuff. Because, like I think we've all said these words, the cinematography, the way it looked, the way it was directed, it was astonishing. I love some of the shots. I think they were so well crafted. When you looked at some of the scenes, what I really enjoy, and this is why I said Donnie Darko, sometimes they'll focus on someone's face. The camera shot will just be their eyes or their face. And then everything that is going on around them, you don't have to see. It's the reactions of the face that tell the story.
Yeah.
And that, for me, holds a huge impact in film. And sometimes you don't need to see or hear the stuff. You just watch their reaction. And they did a lot of that. And I love that sort of stuff. I was sitting there going, this is amazing. Mm. But then I had to go along with the story and have a bloody magpie's head cut off and random shit. But that sort of filming and directing, God, this director can go on to huge, huge things.
Well, it's actually Ari Aster's debut film.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a good start. And every time there was a interesting part of action that was going on in the screen, it was dead centre of the screen. Even when the characters moved that you had the full focus on, the camera followed them as the centre of the screen. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, the shot composition was brilliant and didn't seem like a debut filmmaker's work at all. And I liked how a lot of the shots of the house mirrored the shots of the kind of little doll houses that Toni Collette's character made. And I loved that. I think it was the opening shot or right near the start, where you kind of slowly pan across and then zoom into one of the doll's houses. And then becomes the kid's bedroom. You see his dad walk in. Yeah, I thought the direction was great. And I think the lighting played brilliantly into that as well. It was so well shot in terms of lighting.
Yeah. However.
I've just talked about the good stuff.
So
we've had 2 minutes and now I'm going to piss.
So what I want to talk about is actually a mixture of good and bad.
Yeah.
Toni Collette as Annie. Now, Toni Collette is a wonderful actress. She's done some great stuff in her career. Mm-hmm. The first half, or the first three quarters of the film, I was on board with. I thought she did a magnificent job of portraying these two different types of grief and also this slow descent into madness. The last quarter of the film where we see her character, I really couldn't care for her anymore.
Yeah.
I think this was during a seance scene. It was especially when her and Gabriel Byrne's character Steve are having that final confrontation about throwing Charlie's notebook into the fire.
Uh-huh.
I could not care for her because it almost turned, like you said, into a parody. It
was
mania at its most maniacal. It was too much, and it actually dragged on a lot longer than it should have.
Yeah, she overacted wildly. Like, I read a lot of reviews in the run-up to this saying it's her best performance, and that if the Oscars ever cared about horrors, she'd get an Oscar nomination. It was so overwrought, so over the top.
Yeah.
I really wanted to like her, and I think you're right, Gemma. I think maybe the first three quarters of the film, she is kind of great, but then she just spirals into overacting and scenery chewing in the end. It really annoyed me.
If you want to watch a great horror performance that would be worthy of an Oscar nomination, Mia Farrow in Rosemary's Baby. That's probably the best example I can think of a horror film where accolades need to be directed to. Mm-hmm, not Toni Collette.
There's some scenes where I was expecting Leslie Nielsen to come on. We were across. And that would have made it for me. I'd have been like, okay, I'm on board with this. What about the rest of the actors? I mean, you said about Tony, but the rest of them I didn't give a shit for. The husband, I don't even know what his name is. But
Gabriel Byrne. I thought he was quite good, actually. He kind of underplayed it. He didn't go over the top, but then he wasn't in it that long.
No.
I thought that the son was abysmal. I couldn't stand his face.
He was as annoying. Oh, I'm not going to slag him off too much, but you know in the last one we watched Jurassic World and I said that annoying kid character? It's like a run at the moment of really bad kid actors.
Yeah.
And he was awful. I wanted to punch his face.
Me
he was
too.
Just annoying, and I was glad that he was going through all this suffering and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you go to the party and you let your sister eat a cake. His overreaction then to an allergic reaction and everything. It was embarrassing. He should not be put in this big film. He should be doing drama school, learning to act, not doing this sort of stuff. There's better child actors out there.
Yeah,
look at Bloody It, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I thought he was abysmal. I thought the daughter was really good. It's a shame she wasn't in it that much.
Millie Shapiro. Yeah, she's just started out on Broadway, and I think she is going to have a good career ahead of her. Anne Dowd as Joan. So this is the lady who kind of infiltrates Annie's world. Now, she's in The Handmaid's Tale as Aunt Lydia. She's great as Aunt Lydia.
She is, yeah.
She's too over the top in this, I'm afraid.
Yeah, there was one bit in this that really pissed me off. It's when she runs into Toni Collette's character in the parking lot of the mall.
Yeah.
And she's telling her about the seance, and she keeps grabbing her arm.
Yeah.
Every two seconds, she keeps grabbing her arm and pulling her towards her. It's like, if I was Toni Collette, I'd have fucking decked her. It was doing me head in.
And when she's like, oh my God, oh, what? And again, that was too much for me.
Yeah.
Too much. And this is a horror film. Horror films are supposed to be over the top and elaborate.
Yeah.
But this was a different kind of horror film. This was all to do with the quietness. It's all about sort of the understated. It's like letting a firework off too early.
And speaking of over the top, I thought the music was terrible. It was all ominous tones. Boom, boom. Mm-hmm. It was so heavy-handed. Like, we get it. This is a dangerous bit. This is a scary bit. Yeah. We know. You don't need to highlight it, lampshade it with the music every time.
Would have been better without music.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with not having a score in a film.
You said it's a horror. I was in a cinema, and it was pretty busy, to be honest. It was a couple of days after it came out. Now, you know the final scene when she's going into that treehouse woods, and she floats up?
Yeah.
The whole cinema started laughing like it was American Pie or something, like full-on belly laughs. Mm. And at that point, literally, people in the cinema were just getting their phones out. Yeah. Everyone had lost interest, and that's the big reveal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's a seance. Oh my God, look at this fucking... Did you guys laugh?
Yeah.
Because it looked awful.
It was strange.
How did you get it so wrong? Because the rest of it was directed well. It's not like they haven't got budget.
I know.
It was like someone put a bit of string on her and just pulled up a figure. It was like terrible. Whoop. Dreadful.
However, I do like that scene before everything all kicks off, where you're just watching the son sit on his bed in darkness. Then it takes about 5 or 6 seconds to realise at the top corner is Annie just stood like... above in the ceiling, just watching, stalking her son. I thought that was genuinely terrifying. And I know we slagged this off a bit already, but that scene is single-handedly one of the scariest things I've seen in a long time.
See, I didn't find it remotely scary, but I thought that was a great use of lighting.
Agreed.
Because the room was lit just enough so that after 4 or 5 seconds, as you say, Gemma, you started to realise... Oh, fuck, is that her in the corner up there?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't show it straight away. That was really well done. I did like that. But going back to the audience reaction, Mark, to the headless corpse floating.
There's no other way of saying it.
It's been amazing how much of a chasm between the critical reaction and the audience reaction. So in America, they do this thing called cinema score. When people come out of the cinemas, they're given a card, essentially, to vote what score they would give it. And across the board, this from critics has been getting 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5. The cinema score that it got from fans was D+.
Wow.
Whoa.
D. That's, you know... So it's amazing how the critics are raving about it, but people like us are thinking, no, it's fucking shit.
Yeah. I mean, I have seen a few of my friends. They've all said it's a masterpiece. It's a lot like Get Out. It's a lot like The Witch.
It's a
very slow burner. You just need to, Mark, you don't understand. You just got to give it time. It's just a story. You should be more involved with it. It's not going to always please you. And I'm like, no, it's just not enjoyable. Mm. I will happily say it's crafted well, but it's not enjoyable.
Yeah.
And The Witch is one of the worst films I've seen. Same company too.
But it had Chris Finch in it, so I'm quite happy.
Finchy.
Way down there, love.
But those two films are from the same company as
A24.
Yeah, they've got a thing going as being the kind of indie horror company at the minute, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And the worry is, or I suppose it's not a worry for the company or the people who liked it, but I think there's going to be a sequel. Because even though people are coming out of this film and not particularly liking it, it's made a hell of a lot of money and the critical reaction's been good. I would put cash money on it now that they will make a prequel where we'll see... the grandma
Ellen.
Before she died, and
you know,
Ellen's experiences as a young woman in this devil worshipping cult, and how her husband died and how her son died. I guarantee they'll do that prequel.
Oh, it happened with Annabelle.
Oh, God. The one thing I'll give it credit for, though, is if we'd reviewed it the day we come out of the cinema, I'd have probably given it 1 out of 10, genuinely. I've thought about it. It's been about a week now. I have thought about it a lot. It's a film I have been thinking about again and again. You know, when you watch a film, you just switch off normally.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about certain scenes. It might just be because it's bad, but I've been thinking again and again, like we did with The Guest.
Mm.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not putting it in the same category as The Guest. The Guest is a great film, and it definitely grew on me. But this film I might need to see again to understand bits more and just kind of... just start to warm to it, but it's still not a great film, but I have been thinking about bits of it, and that's a good sign sometimes.
Yeah, I suppose. I've forgotten it entirely.
Lucky bastard.
I haven't paid it a second thought since I left the cinema until this very minute.
Wait until you get your bank statement. Bastard!
So on that tack, should we score it?
Yeah, let's go for it. Ben, you wrap it up first.
Gash, 3 out of 10.
Wow! Gemma.
Mine's going to be a little bit higher. I appreciate the way how it was filmed. I appreciate the way how it looks. But it's not a perfect film. I'm going to give it a low 6 out of 10.
That's pretty good. I'll go with a 6 as well, but that's about a 4, 5.
Yeah.
You want to go 5?
Well, it is 5. Yeah. 6 plus 3.
So overall, Hereditary gets a skip to the end.
5.
Out of 10. It's competition time! 99 different competitions is a lot of prizes.
Yes, isn't it?
Hell of a lot. And we're not going to stop anytime soon. So on the last episode, we reviewed Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And to tie it in nicely, Funko gave us some awesome Funko Pops for Jurassic World. Now, the question we put out there to win a set of 4 was, who directed Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom? So, Ben?
J.A. Bayona.
It's true. I'm glad you said that because I can't pronounce it. And it's Sarah Price on email who will be getting those 4 Funkos. And you've seen this week, a lot of people are taking photos of their prizes.
Yeah.
We will retweet them. We'll put them out on Facebook. We love seeing you so happy because of the stuff we give you. Isn't that nice?
Aww.
Funko also gave us some Jurassic Park Funkos. Now, I'm not just saying this, but they're better. They're cooler. Yeah. They're more iconic. And we had a whole set of 4 of these. And all we said was, who directed Jurassic Park? So, Gemma?
Steven Spielberg.
It's true. And Luke Jones on email will be getting those Funko Pops. And again, I want to see pictures. I want to see you in your garden building a sand pit with all the Funkos and trees. And you know, go all out, recreate Jurassic Park in your garden.
Have we awarded prizes to kindergarten kids?
As we were masturbating over our dad, Kurt Russell, we made it very, very special by asking for some related Funko Pops. And we got some from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And as you know, in that film, the character he plays is Ben.
Ego.
It's true. And we had 3 of these to give away. So Steve Jones, Sean Phillips and Louise Beckhold will be all getting one of those. And you have to put that online. Oh, in a picture of, you know, a picture of dad. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
The prizes didn't stop there. Last Exit to Nowhere gave us a Big Trouble in Little China, the Pork Chop Express t-shirt, because that was our rewatch and we had a lot of fun with that. Really simple, who directed Big Trouble in Little China?
John Carpenter.
It's true, the absolute horror god. And Simon, which is at LostGate92, will be getting that in the post. We didn't stop there, we had a Jack Burton trucking cap from Last Exit, which is bloody sexy. And we said, to tie it in nicely... Gracie Law is played by who in Big Trouble in Little China?
Kim Cattrall.
It's true. And Dan Hopwood on Instagram. There you go. Ooh. Our first winner on Instagram. They're now entering on there. We'll be getting that hat. And again, I want to see pictures. And Ocean's 8, which we didn't review. Bloody good. We had a nice bundle which consisted of a t-shirt, a stainless steel black bottle, basically, for your drinks, a black vinyl tote bag, a beach ball, a rose gold diamond pen, an iWallet with earbud keeper, and a USB travel adapter. Bloody loads of stuff, all branded with Ocean's 8.
Fantastic.
The question we put out there was, Anne Hathaway plays which character in the film?
Daphne?
It's true. And Jay Moss got that on email, and she said she's a huge fan, went to see it after watching... what's his name? Norton?
Graham
Norton. All the cast
Edward
on there.
Oh, right.
Edward Norton. Yes.
Has he got a talk show?
I would watch that.
So would I.
But yeah, Graham Norton. And she went and watched it and thought it was actually really good and wasn't expecting good things. So I hope you like it because you've now got loads of stuff with Ocean's 8 on it.
It's definitely not tat.
No, definitely not. And finally, Richard Sounds, our good friends, gave us some AKG Bluetooth headphones. Wow, this is a good one. Which Corey track would you listen to first if you won them? So this isn't actually a correct answer, but as we're here on the spot, Gemma, what would you listen to?
Oh, Ascension, Millennium every single time. Oh,
wow, gets the bass on that.
I know, gets me down with my bad self.
Yeah. Ben, what would you listen to?
Oh, go for it.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. Well, the winner is Chris336iz, and he said he would want We Wanted Change.
Oh!
What a tune.
Plot twist.
That is the one. So you'll be getting them. Wow. But should we give some more stuff away?
Of course. Yeah.
A little bit of info. We were going to do Incredibles 2, but yeah, we didn't. We did Hereditary, which kind of backfired. So our good friend Sully got us a nice set of 6 Incredibles Funkos, because they don't do Hereditary ones, which would be good, wouldn't it? Imagine that, getting the
headless one.
That'd be awesome. So, that noise freaks me out. But to win that, all you're going to have to do is tell us who directed Incredibles 2. Very serious, sensible questions this week.
Oh, honestly, God. No. Here we go, Jenna.
It's coming.
Here we go.
It's coming. I see the signs.
Did any of you see the trailer this week for The Secret of Marrowbone? It's a new horror that
yes.
looks pretty good.
No.
You're probably too furious.
Well, I will never watch a horror again as long as I live. After Hereditary, I'm done.
It's Dane DeHaan, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're going to win a light, a pen, a book, and a t-shirt. Let's keep it simple. Who directed that film?
Okay.
Easy.
Sorry.
Easy.
Easy.
Funko have come up good. On this episode shortly, we'll be masturbating over Jack Nicholson. So they've got us 3 shining Funko Pops, which are awesome, and 2 daubs. Let's say Jack Torrance is in which film? That's really
Ooh,
easy.
What could it be?
I know. And to go nicely with that, we have some shining tees from Last Exit to Nowhere. So they've got a really, really nice design. Who directed The Shining? Like that?
Mm-hmm.
And they've changed it up a bit this time. You might want to enter this one, Jem.
Go on.
They're giving us an Overlook Hotel mug.
Right. Where, how do I enter?
That's
tell
what
me
she
now.
Said.
What? Why would she say that?
finger up bum.
It's
too vulgar.
I can't.
We've got to stop.
Shocking.
Let's change it. So who plays Jack's wife, Wendy, in the film The Shining? How do you like that?
I like those apples.
Fantastic. And finally, this is good. These are like 130 quid. So we've got some Sennheiser's RS-165 closed back wireless headphones.
Ooh.
Really decent. Do you know what? I'm going to put you on the spot. Ben, how should people win it? What do you want to ask them? It hasn't got to be Corey related.
Yeah.
It hasn't got to be what podcast would you listen to. You can have this moment. How do they win these £139 headphones?
All they have to do is simply tell us which legendary British movies podcast is about to reach its 100th episode.
Oh!
Wow!
That's good. Fantastic. So the best way to enter our competitions is to go on skiptotheend.co.uk, because on there's our Twitter, our Facebook, our email, and look, Dan won this week on Instagram. So many ways to enter, and we'll announce all the winners on episode 100 in 2 weeks' time.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot and we talk about our favourite performance from said actor or actress. On the last episode, we picked out the one, the only, Mummy Man, Jack Nicholson. Very excited about this one, lads. How about you guys? Are you excited?
Really excited.
It's your moment, I think.
I feel so. But I'm not going to go first because that's not the way how the world works. Instead, I'm going to throw it to one of you guys. Mark, I want to hear your favourite Jack Nicholson performance. Come on, tell me.
It's the easiest one I've done yet. The Joker in Batman from 1989, before Tim Burton started releasing shit. It's an absolute masterpiece of a performance.
It is.
It's cracking.
Unbelievable. I think when we did our top 3 or top 5 back in the day, superhero films, this was my number one. Mm-hmm. It hasn't changed. I think it's unbelievably well done. It's dark. It's got the humour. But as the Joker, do not get me wrong, Heath Ledger added a completely different one to the universe. I don't want to compare them. They don't need to be compared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's just have him as a standalone performance. He was sadistic, he was funny, but he's believable. And he'd be easily one of my favourite villains in cinema history. So for that alone, it's got to be that. It's the easiest one I've ever done. I thought he was dirty, he was scary. He actually generally gave me the chills. I think it's the makeup, the way he has that smile.
Oh, yeah.
He's so over the top, but in a good way, not like hamming it up and being over the top and making you laugh. It's a, oh God, this is a bit too over the top. And I forgot it was Jack Nicholson, which is the best credit to any actor when they're trying to do a villain.
Yeah, I've got a question for you though. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? He's amazing in this film.
So
absolutely
good.
Yeah. It's that laugh. That laugh, like, makes my skin crawl.
It's amazing. And it's a shame because you kind of think to yourself, I miss him on screen. He doesn't do any good films anymore. Tim Burton, I'm not just trying to pick on him, but he doesn't do any good films anymore. No. I don't have any hope. You know, when you think Batman in 1989 didn't have his missus in it and didn't have Johnny Depp in it. And that's when he used to make good films, Edward Scissorhands, stuff like that. It's such a shame that now he's just doing any old... Is he doing...
He's doing Dumbo.
Oh, great. Oh, God. All's being solved in this world.
Right, you guys can't see this. They're about to flip this goddamn table.
Dumbo?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Live action.
Yeah. Oh, Christ,
I know. But I think the Jungle Book did pretty well, so they've just gone, oh, well, we'll add some more. But let's not take away from the Joker. A great performance and... I think one day we'll do it as a rewatch. I think the Batman, because it's absolutely marvellous.
And I think you're right. There's no need to compare him to Heath Ledger or to compare him to Mark Hamill, who does the Joker in the animated
version.
They are their own thing. It's like, I think it's a pointless argument when people argue about which is the best Bond.
Yeah.
You know, Daniel Craig is a very different character to Sean Connery. So there's no need to compare. Just enjoy them for their own merits. Yeah. And I think that's true of the Joker too.
Great example there. But the one that winds me up is when people say Truth Movement, Former Child Actor by Corey, or The Angels. They're their own thing. Yeah. They're not the same. Same. Okay,
don't
the Brains
them.
Wrote the songs, but that doesn't mean they're the same outfit.
And they're equally good.
Definitely. 100%. What is your favourite, though, if you had to?
I had to pick. Yeah. Couldn't do it, mate.
Good.
Sophie's choice.
No. That's a proper Corey file answer. Mm. That's the test. Yeah. If you ever meet anyone that says they love Corey, ask them that question.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they go, oh, definitely Truth Movement, don't speak to them again.
Exactly. You should be sacrificing yourself first and
Kids
foremost.
Kids
too. Kids
too.
Mm. So, yeah.
Ben, your go.
So it's at this point I want to make it very clear that what I'm about to say is not his best film.
Okay.
Nor is it his best performance.
Okay.
It just happens to be my favourite performance
of
his.
That's what it's all about.
And it's Dr. Buddy Rydell in Anger Management.
Nice.
I genuinely really like this film. So Adam Sandler plays a businessman with barely repressed rage issues. And then after an outburst on a plane, he's sentenced to anger management therapy under the care of Dr. Buddy Rydell. And it's an unhinged and utterly fearless performance from Nicholson. He just doesn't give a shit how ridiculous he looks. He will do whatever it takes, all in service of the joke. He says some of the weirdest, cruelest things, things a therapist would never say in a million years. And he does it all with that legendary, sinister Joker smile of his. And it's such a weird smile because he looks simultaneously evil, but also kind of ingratiating. You kind of want to be his friend and just laugh with him. But the shit he comes out with. And the character has no sense at all of personal boundaries or normal human behaviour. Like, there's a bit when he's working with Sandler's character and he decides to move into his house, but not only move into his house, he insists that they have to share a bed and he sleeps in the nude. There's a bit where he's in a car with Sandler and they're driving over a bridge, I think it's like the Brooklyn Bridge or something, and it makes Sandler pull over the car on the bridge, which you're not supposed to do. And as part of his therapy, he makes him sing I Feel Pretty at the top of his lungs. The two of them singing this I Feel Pretty is amazing. And then there's a scene where they go to a monastery and find a monk played by John C. Reilly. And this monk is a person of peace, as all monks are. But Nicholson's character manages to persuade the monk that Sandler's character used to show his dick to his little sister. So this monk snaps and beats the shit out of Sandler's character. It's so good. I mean, I understand why people are dismissive of this. Like, it's just another run-of-the-mill Sandler comedy. And it is. It really is. But Nicholson takes it up to 11. It's worth watching purely for him. Have you guys seen this film?
Yes, and I went to see it at the cinema.
Did you really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it was just because I liked Sandler. He had done stuff like Billy Madison. He had done some good films back then. But then at that point, it was after this, he went shit.
Yeah.
But that was one of his last good ones. And do you know what? Them two on screen together have got great chemistry.
Yeah, they really do.
And you've got to give him credit. We slag off Adam Sandler any opportunity, but in that film, he's up there with him. Yeah. He is. They're bloody brilliant.
Yeah, do you say you have seen it? Or
I
not,
haven't,
really?
But it is on Netflix, and it is on my list, so I'm going to
get
it
watched, seriously.
I will do.
It's what, an hour and a half of your life? It's not going to kill you, and it is a good bit of fun, and Nicholson's amazing.
Mark's acceptable time limit for yeah.
Not quite, but it's well worth your time, and it's you'll laugh.
I will do.
You'll have a laugh.
Yeah, and I wish...
having a laugh.
I wish he would do more comedies, out-and-out comedies like this, because he's got a real talent for it.
He has.
Yeah.
He's literally... When I was researching him, he's not doing anything at the moment, and he's like... He's literally just sitting, drinking, smoking cigars, chilling, and why not? You've earned the right to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you think of some of his... I'm not going to mention it in case it's one of your films, but when you think of some of the films he's done, bring him back.
Yeah. He is one of my favourite actors of all time, and it probably comes to no surprise that my choice is Randall McMurphy from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. Nice.
Not a surprise, is it? But this was difficult because he's done some amazing films in his career. I think it was between this, The Shining and Chinatown, which will be brought back for a rewatch at some point in the future. But I chose Randall because of the development that the character goes through. And it's a real growth. It's a real journey. So when we first see him enter the institution, he's cocky. He's loud. He literally sees this whole thing as a holiday camp because he's managed to get out of jail. So he's having a laugh. He's, you know, causing a bit of mischief. And of course, locking horns with a formidable Nurse Ratched. Scary motherfucker.
Yeah, just a bit.
Just a bit. But rather than sticking to being a jerk throughout the whole film, he actually realises that the fellow patients that he's sharing a space with are actually real human beings. He wants to help them. He wants them to have the courage to talk to a girl or just have a sense of what freedom is all about and be themselves. So we see this real development throughout the whole film where he's actually becoming one of them. He doesn't see them as these crazy people. He sees them as people. Mm. The real hit of home is when it's during Billy's suicide, and it is such a heartbreaking scene. But we see the cogs in his head turn because he realizes that Nurse Ratched is responsible, yet she managed to shirk all responsibility and put it back onto Billy. He just erupts in this rage where he just takes her down and starts attacking her. And it's this passion that Jack Nicholson has. He shows it in Randall McMurphy. He's shown it with a lot of his other films that he's been in. But it's just, he can flip the switch and go from any kind of emotion in one fell swoop. And it doesn't come across as hammy. It doesn't come across as contrived. It comes across as being in the moment. And that, to me, is a great actor.
I couldn't disagree with that. And he always does seem like someone, not just in this character, but in all of his films, like a guy who has this rage or this ability to have these outbursts just below the surface. He's ready to tap into it at any point. He's phenomenal.
He's a piece of art.
If I was working on set with him and I was like going up to him like, hey, can I just, you know, can I just borrow your phone or can I just, you know, got a tenner? I'd be terrified, wouldn't you? Just ask him about anything because, like you said, he's so close to flipping.
Yeah. I love the idea of one of his co-workers going up to him and asking him for a tenner.
Well, they might be doing a Subway run at lunch or, you know, that Subway. I wouldn't mind 3-foot-longs. That'd be pretty decent.
I've got a foot long for your pal.
It's not even a 6-incher. So, talking about 6 inches, what did our social media come up with on our masturbate this time?
Where was the synergy?
I don't know. Just help.
Emma on Twitter, at EmmaMBurke0408, has agreed with you, Mark. She said, I have to say the Joker in Batman. He brought a lot of personality and fun to the role. Thanks to him, the Joker was revived and became a much-loved villain.
Nice.
On Facebook, David Roper has said, Chinatown. Such a powerful performance and a devastating denouement.
I've never seen it.
Do you know what denouement means, Mark?
Nope.
Can you say it for the two?
Is it a type of ice cream by Magnum or something?
Yes, it is, yeah.
It's exactly what it is. Well, how did he get it?
Well done. On Twitter, John Pyatt, at Pyatt22, has said, Frank Costello in The Departed. It's just threat, threat, and threat.
I thought you were going to have that, dude.
It was my second choice, yeah.
I thought that was the one.
Very, very close. On Instagram, Daniel, aka Garbage_Clown, has said, quite simply, he said, Easy Rider, Easy Choice.
Nice.
Can't disagree with that either. He's fantastic.
Absolute classic.
One of his earliest roles as well. On Twitter, Dynamite Mousetrap, at Movie Inspector, has said he's a legend and hasn't done a poor performance. All the big ones I love, but the devastating performance in The Pledge has always stayed with me.
I've never seen that.
Neither have I.
Should we all pledge to watch it?
Hey. No, I
don't even know what it's about.
No, I don't.
Me neither.
Not familiar.
Wow.
On Facebook, Russell Hewitt has said The Last Detail, a great performance in a brilliant movie. Are you going to say you've not seen it as well, Mark?
I'm trying to think of a pun.
Leave it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
They made like a follow-up to this. I think it's kind of a pseudo-sequel. I think it was Richard Linklater who directed it with Bryan Cranston playing the Jack Nicholson role.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so I need to check that out as well.
What was that called?
I can't remember.
The Very Last Detail.
Brilliant. Oh, look at that. All the jokes. He's got all the jokes today.
Jokes, 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 jokes.
It's like Bobby Davro or something.
What happened to him?
Who cares? On Twitter, Amy Thomason, at athomason11, has said, Carnal knowledge. He's such a gross character, but man, that monologue he gives, berating Anne Margaret's character, is one of the best of his career. I don't know that one, but I want to find out. I want to see that monologue.
I like the fact that the word berated is in there, so I'm game.
On Instagram, David, a.k.a. Garrick4, has said, A Few Good Men. He turned a good film into a great one with that performance.
Oh, that's
so iconic.
Oh, yeah, classic.
You can't handle the truth.
on Twitter. Draw One Last Breath podcast at Draw One Last has said Jack Torrance in The Shining. That is one scary dude.
Mm-hmm. I would have put my mortgage on you saying that, if I'm honest. Surprise me there.
Don't you remember saying that One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one of our favourite films?
I know,
of all
but The Shining is what, yeah. you know, that's what I associate with. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Weird. I just. You caught me on a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest day.
And that links in nicely to our final pick on Facebook, Matthew Kartner, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a legendary performance that stayed with me ever since I saw the movie.
I'll shake the guy's hand when I see him.
Mutant
absolutely.
So we've got one final name
oh
in the pot.
God.
There's only one name left in the pot. Whose turn to pick out?
It's mine.
Oh.
I'm nervous. I actually don't know who it is.
Do you want a drum roll?
Yeah. So, on episode 100, we're going to be going for it over the former child actor himself, Corey Feldman.
The rewatch on this episode is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, directed by Sergio Leone and starring Clint Eastwood, Eli Wallach, and Lee Van Cleef in this classic Western film. Set against the frontier lands of America, a bounty hunting scam joins two men, Blondie, the good, and Tuco, the ugly, against a third, Angel Eyes, he's the other one, in a race to find $200,000 in gold buried in an isolated cemetery. Now, I'd like to go on record and say that I'm not a big fan of Western films. So on the last episode, this was a big risk. This was me getting out of my comfort zone. So I know how much you love this, Ben. So I'd actually like to give this to you first and explain to me why you love this film. Maybe you don't. Maybe time has changed you. But your initial reactions, please.
All right, let's have this right. It is the greatest Western of all time. And it is also one of the single greatest films, regardless of genre, of all time. It is a flawless masterpiece.
Mark?
At which point I'm going to leave the room because I don't know what more needs to be said.
Go on, Mark.
This is the first time I've ever seen this film, which is just criminal, isn't it, really?
Mm.
It absolutely blew my mind. It's probably got the three best leads since Jaws, I honestly think.
Wow.
So when you think of those three characters and what they perform back in the 60s, every time I was watching it, it was disturbing me that this was made in 66. I was literally going, how? This looks like what Tarantino's doing now, the credits and the colours and everything. The editing, the close-ups, the music, the action sequences, it's flawless. It genuinely is one of the best films I've ever seen and the best rewatch probably I've done in 2018. I think I can't fault it. It's absolutely amazing. And I watched it again. I told you guys a minute ago before we were recording. I can't wait to watch it again. I just keep seeing things and I just think it's a textbook of how to make a film.
And that's extraordinary coming from you because it's a 3-hour movie with your notorious attention span, that of a goldfish.
Well, I did half an hour a day for 6 days and then the week after I did it again. But no, absolutely mind-blowing stuff.
That delights me to hear you say that. Gemma, how about you though?
Okay. It's changed my perception of Western films.
Thank the Lord.
I'd like to shake your hand, Ben, actually.
Oh, let's do that then.
Thank you.
That's a nice manly shake you've got.
Thank
there,
Jan. Thank you. That's what they all say.
I thought you were going to say nice manly hands.
Wow. My 35 years of being on this planet, I've never watched this film, and I'm so disappointed with myself that it's taken me that long. However, this is the beauty of somebody that loves films, somebody that is a part of this great podcast, and it's the reason, I would say it's probably one of the main reasons why I fall in love with cinema every single day. There is nothing wrong with this film. Everything about this is perfect. Cinematography, music, acting, exactly what you just said, Mark. But my goodness me, I'm floored. I'm shook as to how much I enjoyed and loved this film. And like you, Mark, I can't wait to see this again. Actually, if any independent cinemas are listening to this right now, please put this on the big screen.
Oh, yeah.
I want to experience this the way how it was intended of being watched. So please, if any of you guys are doing something,
do a trilogy night. We'll go.
Oh, yeah.
That would be awesome.
The whole
Prince
trilogy,
Charles or something.
I'm up for that.
Real. Yeah, I kind of want to skip to the end, as it were, with this one. We'll talk about all the individual elements that Gemma mentioned, the cinematography, direction, acting, etc. I want to talk about the influence of the film, to piggyback on what Mark was saying. You know, Mark, you said you see Tarantino doing this stuff now. There's no surprise for that. Tarantino has said on many occasions it is his favourite film of all time.
Ah.
He called it the greatest achievement in the history of cinema. And who are we to disagree with Quentin Tarantino? And you can see so much of it in his films. He's emulated it so much. almost all of his films pay homage to it. You know, Reservoir Dogs, Kill Bill, Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained, and especially The Hateful Eight, which he even used, you know, Ennio Morricone music.
Yeah.
He's a guy who clearly has taken all the best bits from this and interwoven it into his own work. And he's not the only one. If you've seen a film with a Mexican standoff in the last 50 years, it's because people love the Mexican standoff in the cemetery of this film. That's why those things became popular in movies. If you've seen things like Quick Zooms, where Edgar Wright does it all the time.
I was about to say, he's the king of it.
Yeah, it's because Leone pioneered that kind of stuff. It is so goddamn influential. And people don't realise, if they don't know this film, if they haven't seen it, they don't realise how much of cinema was changed by this fantastic, fabulous movie.
I have to say, again, jumping to the end of the film, that single-handedly inspired me so much to really explore the whole Western genre. That's Mexican standoff scene alone. The way how it... You start off with this big bird's eye view of the three of them just looking at each other, working out which one is going to shoot which one. And then the camera kind of draws a little bit closer into them, where eventually we have that intercut, that juxtaposition of scenes where you've just got the slits of the guy's eyes and it just builds up into this crescendo. I literally watched it with my mouth wide open. And I think, and I know this is going to sound like a real loser thing to do, but as soon as the film finished, I applauded it because I've never seen anything like it, and I never felt so much excitement about a film that was completely alien to me. I was floored.
It's for me the best scene in movie history. Yeah. That
agreed. Mexican completely standoff. Agree.
What do you think, Mark?
The McDonald's scene when the bears drive is on the counter at McDonald's. Yeah. Mac and me.
Mac and me. You're right. You're right.
Think of the movie. He does.
You're right. I didn't think
the
of that.
The way the camera pans out, and then you see him twirl.
It's true.
But my God, that cemetery looked amazing. Yeah. It was heart racing the whole time. I didn't know the end, and I didn't know who was going to win.
No, me neither. You
could have an inkling, but Tuco is one of my favourite characters of all time. It's so good that you mentioned like Edgar Wright and, you know, all these different people that have paid homage and just took influences. But the characters, you know, I really do mean it. My favourite film of all time is Jaws. I know this. It's got three lead characters that you love. You absolutely love Quint, you love Brody, and you love Hooper. But in this, I don't love Tuco at all.
He's a bastard, isn't he?
But I fucking love his performance, and I love his character, and I believe in what he's doing. Yeah. And this is 52 years ago that these people are putting in these performances. I still think it's a lie. I think it's like the moon landing. I think it was made 20 years ago, and they're bullshitting us. But Tuco is just absolutely awesome. And the moment that he's in the bath... Again, it's one of those, it's just magical. You never imagine at any point you think he's fucked. He's absolutely fucked. He's in the bath, he's been caught and he's going to die. He still came out on top by shooting him with a bath, with a bloody pistol in the bath.
Yeah.
Everything about this character is disgusting, but I love it.
Yeah. And that bit when he shoots the guy in the bath and then gets out and says, if you're going to shoot, shoot, don't talk. Eli Wallach ad-libbed that.
Oh,
and apparently the whole crew just started laughing. They were like, that's genius. And he was like, I was being serious. That wasn't a joke line, but it's absolutely brilliant.
He also ad-libbed the gun scene at the start of the film. When you see him pick up all these different types of pistols, and it looks like anybody who doesn't have any experiences with guns, he's literally just picking it up, taking a few bits here and there. I think at one point he listens to them, sort of like rattles them. But again, it's to his detriment because he is deadly with these pistols.
It's an amazing performance. And, you know, it's a performance that wouldn't happen now because Eli Wallach is a very white man playing the very Mexican Tuco, effectively in brown face.
You
wouldn't get away with that now. Mm-mm. But he's absolutely brilliant. And I lost count of the amount of times he says, you bastard! Yeah. You bastard!
You dirty son of a bitch!
He's absolutely amazing. Or, like Mark said, it's these three leads. And really, Tuco is the lead.
Yeah.
It's Clint's film. Everyone thinks of it as Clint's film. But Tuco is in more scenes than anyone in the film. It's all about him.
Yeah, there's also a really funny scene when him and Blondie, they've got themselves dressed up in the army uniforms. And in the distance, they see these big load of horses come forward. Oh, it's one of them. I can't see if they're grey or navy. Yeah. Then they start going, hey, damn the Yankees. As they come closer, they realise it's not the colour of uniform they're wearing. It's dust. They brush it off. Dark navy. Ooh, wah, wah, wah. It made me laugh out so loud.
It's absolutely amazing. And I know we're going to get to talk onto Clint. I want to leave him for a minute. I want to talk about the other two for the moment. But let's talk about Lee Van Cleef for the moment as the villain, as the bad Angel Eyes.
He's so terrifying.
The first time we see him, right near the start of the film, it's when he goes into that former soldier's little homestead in the village. And again, talking about Tarantino inspiration, this scene where he's sitting with this villager, it reminds me of the Hans Lander opening scene in Inglourious Basterds.
You know, absolutely, with the farmer. Absolutely.
You can see that's where Tarantino has taken his idea for that. And Lee Van Cleef just has one of the greatest bad guy faces in history, because his face is so angular and sharp. And one minute when he's smiling, kind of like Jack Nicholson, he can look ingratiating and you want to be his friend, but the next minute he's sinister as all fuck. And watching that scene, you just know some shit's going to go down. And of course he ends up killing him. And I love that scene, because in one scene that, I don't know, is 5, 6, 7 minutes long, you get that character. You know, he's come to this guy, he's been paid to kill him. This guy then pays him off and says, no, I'm giving you money to kill the guy who asked you to kill me. But he kills him anyway and says, you know, I always complete a job. If I've been paid to do a job, I always complete that. It. And then because he was paid to kill the first guy, he went and killed him as well because he'd been paid to do it. He says, I always complete a job. Yeah. And you know him. Yeah. In one, two scenes, you get this guy entirely.
It's those close-up scenes as well of his face. You said he's got one of the best faces, but it's those real big shots of just his eyes, just his smile, and that's all it needs. And that's not a bad thing. They don't overdo it in this film because it's 3 hours long. Mm-hmm. But those shots of the editing where they go straight up and then out and up, his face is the perfect for that. And that's where I've seen Tarantino use it so much.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Smith uses it. You get it a lot.
What? I just want to piss Ben off.
You brought up Kevin Smith.
But we've seen it again and again. And in Westerns, this is the textbook. It really is. That's how to film tension. Don't show us his gun. Don't show us how he's his stance or how he's standing. Show us his eyes.
That's true.
That's the way.
Yeah, because it's a genuine threat. It doesn't feel like this is just some actor that's taken on a jabroni role just to try and create a bit of tension or badness about the film. He is an absolute threat. He is terrifying. He really is scary.
I wish we did the topic again of top 5 villains.
I'm thinking top 3 Westerns.
He's there, isn't he? Well, we'd do top 3 now, but he'd be the one. So harrowing.
He's absolutely amazing. And then let's talk about the third man in this trio. Let's talk about Clint.
The little guy.
Again, one of the reasons why this film was kind of revolutionary in 66 is because in the run-up to this, your main characters, your lead characters in Westerns were the heroic, swaggering John Wayne types. Mm-hmm. But this character of Blondie, or the man with no name, as he tends to be referred to, he was an anti-hero. He wasn't any of that. He was a flawed, morally ambiguous character. He wasn't the all-American hero at all. In fact, you know, he's called the good. He kills more people than the bad or the ugly.
Yeah.
The person who kills the least is actually the bad. Lee Van Cleef only kills, I think, 3 people, whereas Clint kills 10. But he's the good. And that's what I love, that moral ambiguity.
He also is just looking out for himself. He wants that cash.
Yeah, of course he does, yeah.
Like, no good guy is going to start desecrating somebody's grave in order to get a bit of moolah.
Yeah.
It's a strange one, because like you were saying, Ben, I always associate this film with Clint. Even though I've not seen it, he's on the cover, it's his face, it's always the picture. Whenever you Google it, it's just him in his badass poncho.
Yeah.
I didn't realise how little he was in the film.
Yeah.
And that's mad, because like you said, it's not his film. Yeah. It's not his film, but he gets all the credit.
Yeah.
And I love him in it, and I forgot how young he looks, and he's a handsome fellow, isn't he? He looks the man.
He had it going on.
It's made me now want to watch more of his Westerns.
Oh, like, do it. They're all great.
I've already researched this. There is a ton. I didn't actually realise this.
Oh, yeah.
And they get like star ratings of just under 5 stars out of 5. They're supposed to be really, really exceptional.
He was the king. If you've not seen it, watch all of the Dollars Trilogy. Watch Outlaw Josie Wales. Just get on everything he's ever done. Mm. But his character in the Dollars Trilogy, The Man With No Name, I think he might be the coolest character in movie history.
He's just
so unruffled. Even when he's dying in the desert and he's burnt to a crisp.
Oh my God,
He's still pretty chill. Yeah. he's just so fucking calm and cool. He doesn't get cooler than Clint.
He has a philosophical way of looking at things. Mm. I found a lot of his dialogue was very poetic, very meaningful. It wasn't just empty words like, oh, you son of a bitch, oh, you bastard. He was really assessing the situation, and just the way he expressed himself was quite admirable.
Yeah, exactly. Unruffled is the word I think of when I think of him.
Definitely.
Just nothing fazes him at all.
Can we talk about Ennio Morricone's score?
Oh, my Lord.
I think we should.
Because I've decided any like big event that happens in my life, I want it followed by, ooh, wah, wah.
That's your wedding music.
Is it? Yeah. So do you, Gemma, take Greg to be your lawful wedded husband? I do.
But I love this throughout the whole of the film because it's pretty iconic and everybody knows exactly what it's associated with to this day. But anytime something big or eventful happens within that film, that is echoed straight afterwards. Almost like EastEnders, you know, the
just like that.
Yeah.
Great comparison, Pooch.
But I digress. You should be sick of this kind of music, but you're not. Because every time it happens, you're like, yeah, go on. This is the story I came to watch.
And I love that you don't have to wait until halfway in the movie to hear it. It's in the opening credits. Yep. As soon as the film starts and the actors' names are coming up, it's...
Amazing. It just sucks you in straight away.
Also, the bit of music right at the end during the cemetery showdown, and you've got this opera singer sort of singing along these notes of like trumpets and violins, and it is just beautiful. That piece of music is stunning.
And I've got a feeling Tarantino has used that. He
might
have used it in Kill Bill or
definitely Kill Bill.
Used some of it that wasn't used in this on his Hateful Eight. He got bits that were supposed to be used, and I don't know. He's got his hands on stuff that I didn't know existed. Little bastard.
I know. The music's amazing. And going back to the opening credits, when you see those, they're great. And then we first get introduced to the three main characters. And I love that when we meet them, you then get a freeze frame of each one, and then it scribbles on there which one they are, the good, the bad, the ugly. And again, it's another thing that countless directors have used, that kind of freeze frame label thing since.
And it happens right at the end of the film too.
Oh yeah,
I love
that.
The conclusion, what happens to the characters. I mean, we see Angel Eyes dead in a grave. We see Tuco with a noose around his neck and precariously sort of standing
balancing
on that cross. But and also, sorry to sort of jump from here to there, but that bit, his fate, where he's up on a hangman's noose. If he wants to get the gold, he'll die. But he's going to die anyway because there's no way of him escaping because he's got his hand tied behind his back. But when Blondie gets the gun, shoots the noose, he's released. But again, how is he going to get that gold when his hands are firmly tied behind his back? Oh my God, I'm spent.
And then, as you say, Gemma, the freeze frame and the name comes up, the good again. You're thinking, how's this guy the good? He's clearly a sadistic bastard. Let's talk about the direction for a minute. I'm sorry, Gemma, I'm kind of this one. This is your pick.
No, it's absolutely fine.
Sergio Leone, I don't think there is a director who has a better grasp of shot selection than him. You know, this combination of wide, sweeping vistas, which are aided by brilliant cinematography from Tonino Delacolli, that they look absolutely fabulous. But then combine that with the extreme close-ups of, like Mark mentioned, people's eyes or of their hands hovering next to their gun holsters, ready to draw. And then, as I mentioned as well, the quick zooms on important things. That, he and I forget the name of his editor, but that shot selection, the composition work is just untouchable. It's no wonder Tarantino rates it as highly as he does. I don't think there is a better directed movie than this.
No way.
It's impeccable.
No way. It's too flawless.
The Room?
Oh my God.
That goes without saying.
Yeah.
52 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're now watching Westworld, which is a carbon copy of some of these shots.
Yeah.
Some of the panning, some of the editing. And it's never going to change. And people, like you said, if they've not watched it, I'm sure, to be honest, Gemma, we're ignorant. I think most of the listeners out there are like, Mark and Gemma do a podcast about films. Yeah. They've not watched this. Those people will know that this is the textbook for every genre. It doesn't matter if it's Baby Driver, if it's bloody an episode of The Simpsons. Everything pays homage to this.
Agreed.
It's amazing.
I think if you had to try and pick a fault with it, the only obvious fault is the fact that it's so badly dubbed.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the characters, not the main characters, they're clearly not saying the words that we're hearing, and that's because Leone and his crew were all Italian. So they used to film in Italy or, in some cases, Spain. And what he would do, all the minor characters, he would just hire local actors. He wouldn't even get them to try and speak English. He would just have them say the lines in either Italian or Spanish and then hire Americans to overdub it. So the dubbing is atrocious, but it's kind of... I kind of like it.
Yeah.
It's kind of enjoyable in a way.
It's charming.
It makes it authentic for me. Yeah. I'm watching it going, I'm fine with that. When I watch Bruce Lee films, I'm fine with that. It should be. Yeah. It shouldn't be everything changed for us.
Yeah, exactly. So, the one obvious fault. Yeah. You can live with it or you can enjoy it.
But we respect it.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. It's not even a bloody fault.
Yeah. And of course, it's not going to pass the Bechdel test. There's two ladies in it. That's it. But
I don't even remember them.
No.
Where were they?
But again, I mean, times have changed, of course, but I mean, I'm not even going to use this as an example, but basically my point is this was a time of the era. This was the Wild West was a man's world, and that's something I accept.
Yeah.
And I don't think it takes anything away from it. It's just the way how the story is. And because of the way how the story is, I respect it, and I think it's bloody amazing.
So you're saying that there shouldn't be a remake?
Hell no.
With the three characters played by Rebel Wilson, Anne Hathaway, and Rihanna?
No, I do not.
No?
No.
Are you sure?
God.
I'm very, very sure.
With the score being done by Ed Sheeran?
No. No.
Sheeran.
You know it would happen. He would love to get involved and it would be out next year.
Get into a gunfight and then Lego House starts playing. Thank you.
I am surprised it hasn't been remade.
It shouldn't have to.
I know it's sacred, but nothing's sacred
that's
anymore.
That's the word. You're right, nothing is sacred in Hollywood, but this is sacred ground. You don't touch this.
Yeah. This is the blueprint for every type of film that has that 10 out of 10 that influences another generation of filmmakers.
Are you now going to watch the rest of the trilogy?
I am.
Me too. Mm-hmm. I bought the Blu-ray box set of Amazon, so I can't wait. As soon as it arrives, that's going to be a couple of nights in with a couple of whiskies.
Oh,
can't
go
wrong.
Big time.
What whiskey would you have?
Lagavulin 16.
Ooh. I'll just have Jack Daniels. It's cheaper. There's a bigger.
It's not even whiskey, is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Bourbon, but bourbon. Yeah, it's a type of whiskey.
It's fine. Yeah, right, they'll send it me. It's whatever it wants to be if it's free.
Shall we score it?
I think we should.
Okay, Ben, go on.
Astoundingly, this film was not nominated for any Oscars, because back in the day, spaghetti westerns were considered to be lowbrow. The critics didn't care for it, the Academy didn't care for it, but it luckily has had a critical re-evaluation over the years, and everyone agrees it's one of the greatest films of all time. If I could give it 11, I would, but I'm going to have to set off a 10 out of 10.
Fair dues. Mark?
It's flawless. It is. I can't fault it. And usually you have to watch a film, give it the test of time, all that bollocks. No, 10 out of 10. Absolutely perfect. Loved it. And I just want to watch the rest. And after that, my dad's favourite genre of film of all time is westerns. I grew up and I just never wanted to. I was, I'm going to go and play football. I regret it. And now I'm going to sit with my dad and watch westerns the rest of my life.
Amazing.
Done.
I can't tell you how much this film has actually changed the way how I've watched films. And that is a very serious thing for me to say. It's a genre that I now have a new appreciation for. I completely respect this film. I'm so excited to see it again. And the natural score for me to give it, and the true score I am going to give it, is a 10 out of 10. So therefore, the good, the bad, and the ugly gets a skip to the end. 10 out of 10.
I am utterly delighted that for a film neither of you had seen, you've both given it perfect marks.
It's unbelievable.
It deserves it.
That just justifies my existence.
Dude, it's 3 hours long. It's 3 hours long and I've watched it twice.
Unbelievable.
Who's going to sit next?
Well, it's my pick.
Oh, okay.
And it's episode 100, so it's a big one. I better pick a good one.
You better pick a fucking good one.
Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something a little bit special for the listeners. Our dear, loyal listeners out there in listenerland, we want to bring you into the show even more than we usually do. I'm going to give you guys out there the opportunity to pick the film that we will rewatch on episode 100.
So dangerous.
It is dangerous. It is dangerous. What I want you guys out there in listenerland to do is I want you to tweet us, send us Instagram, send us emails, send us Facebook posts, letting us know what you want us to do on episode 100 as our rewatch. So if you want to get your entries into us, Twitter at STTE podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast or email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. If you want to know what films we previously rewatched that you don't suggest one we've already done, go on to skiptotheend.co.uk and hit the reviews tab and you'll see everything we've previously rewatched. We're going to give a time limit on this, though, because obviously we need time for us guys and you guys out there to watch it. So your entries need to be in by Tuesday the 3rd of July. Tuesday the 3rd of July. I will put out a message on social media on Monday the 2nd as kind of 24-hour reminder to get your last minute entries in. And then I will announce the winner on social media on the evening of Tuesday the 3rd of July.
And do you know what? We'll make it a bit more exciting. The winner will also get a sexy prize from Funko.
A sexy prize?
Yes. Sexy prize. Oh, la la.
Something special that you're not going to just be easily able to go and buy from a shop. Let's make it really good.
It's going to be wrapped in stockings, right?
Whatever it can be, but it'll be something good. We should reward that winner.
We're going to reward you big time. So get your entries in by Tuesday the 3rd of July, and we'll review it in 2 weeks' time.
I'm nervous, but I'm excited.
It's time for a very special one-off quiz. On episode 50, we did a quiz called Quiz to the End, where myself, Mark and Adam asked each other questions about things we'd said and done on the podcast. And I can't remember who won. I think it came down to rock, paper, scissors in the end.
Adam won.
Did Adam win?
I was winning at one point really well. Yeah. And then I just stupidly had a go on the fifth go. Shouldn't have, because I would have won.
Yeah.
Fucked it up. And then we played rock, paper, scissors.
All that prep for nothing.
I love audio-based rock, paper, scissors.
Almost as good as Bullseye.
So we're going to do the same kind of thing again, but this time it's called Quiz to the End, Quiz to the End, number two, like Corey, Angelic, to the core, you see?
Of course.
See what we've done? And because it's the second time we're doing it, two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kids two.
Synergy. Yeah? It all works. So this is how it's going to work. Each of us has 5 questions. We're going to take it in turns, one at a time, to ask one of our questions about things that have happened on the podcast in the last 50 or so episodes. The two people who are playing, who are answering, have to shout out your name. If you want to have a go at it, you shout out your name. First person to shout out the name gets a go at answering the question. If you get the question right, you get a point. If you get the question wrong, you are locked out, and the other person gets a free shot.
God, it's already tense. We're not even started. I'm already like cacking it.
And Gemma.
Yeah.
When you want to shout out, you've got to say your name so it's easier for me to edit when it comes to it later on.
Yes.
Okay? But the listeners don't need to know.
No,
that.
They don't need to know. No. Cool. Don't tell them.
This
no.
is the mics are off, right?
Make sure I chop that bit out as well.
Yeah. Cool. Get rid of that, yeah.
Wicked.
Good plan.
So do the rules make sense to everyone?
Yes.
Perfect.
Shall we get started?
Yeah.
I'm going to go first. Yes. I know what you're about to ask. I'm going to go first. Okay.
Let me just breathe. Seriously, I've got like a, it feels like I'm having an attack.
Don't. I'm like my heart's going 10 to a dozen.
Okay, so get ready to shout your name. Gemma, it is acceptable for you to say Gemma or Pooch.
Yay!
I will accept either.
Hooray.
Question one. On episode 64, I experimented by picking two films for the rewatch.
Gemma.
What were they?
Gemma.
Oh, Gemma, go on.
Paprika and Inception.
The point goes to Jem. That's correct. First rewatch, first and only rewatch where we've done two films. We should do that again.
I liked that a lot.
That was cool. That's
a
cool.
fun one.
Maybe like E.T. and Mac and Me.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
That would be really good.
E.T. is clearly the inferior one.
Who are we going round in a circle then?
Let's go clockwise, Mark, so it's you.
Okay. So this might have been before episode 50. I don't know. My prep work hasn't been the best.
Oh, well done.
On our sex tape episode, which I think might have been a bit before that, who am I describing? Okay, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
He may have taken a fat paycheck
Ben.
Home, but... Can I finish the sentence?
No! Okay. That's how the game works, you shout out your answer.
Okay, go for it.
Jack Black.
He gets the...
Now you can finish your sentence.
He may have taken a fat paycheck home, but he also took a fat gut home every night.
Love it. It's my turn, right?
I don't know how you got that so quick.
That was good.
That's really good.
Really good. Okay, so... We rewatched True Romance last summer, and there was a term of endearment I used for the character of Alabama. What did I call her?
Jesus Christ.
Mark.
Go on, Mark.
Bobby Dazzler.
He's got it!
Well done, Mark.
Well done.
Spectacular. Well done, fella.
I did that on purpose, so we've all got
a
point.
I like it. Excellent. You caused some real tension.
I was Bobby Dazzler!
I think that was the first Gemma ever, wasn't it?
And should have been the last.
Never will be.
Right, this one's dead easy.
Okay.
Question two. Who, in my opinion, is the greatest cinematographer of all time?
Gemma.
Mark.
Mark.
Oh, again.
Oh,
Mark.
Man.
Mark.
Gemma.
That was a dead heat, man.
Mark. See, I'm going again to get back in there.
Should we say it both at the same time?
I think
then
that,
we could split a point.
I think that was a dead heat, so let's have a runoff. A one-time rock, paper, scissors.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
On three.
Yeah, one, two, three, go.
Sorry,
that was Mark shooting his load too early as usual. So you go on four.
Two,
one, two, three, go.
Right, okay, ready?
One, two, three, four.
Oh, paper and
one,
paper.
One, two, three, four.
Rock and rock.
One, two, three, four.
Paper and paper.
One, two, three, four.
One,
two, three, four.
Yes! Rock, smash, and scissors. It's Gemma's.
It's Roger Deakins.
It is Roger Deakins.
I hope the listeners aren't bored.
Second point for Gemma. That was the most intense game of rock, paper, scissors I have ever seen.
I'm sitting in sweat right now.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
I'm so sweaty. I'm not even joking. Like, the back of my knees are just drenched. I'm disgusting.
Are you ready, guys? Remember, shout your name out. Compose yourself.
Yep,
we're getting straight back on.
Come on.
Yep.
During our free fire episode, which famous Olympian did I impersonate?
Ben.
Go for it.
Oh, Christ. It's the South African guy known as the Blade Runner. And I've forgotten his name.
You're so close.
Oh, Christ.
Don't get thrown out because you've pretty much given it to Gemma.
I know.
Oh, fuck. What have I forgotten his name?
I think his missus did.
Forgotten
Shouldn't
a lot
have
now.
To.
I've given you 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Fuck!
Gemma?
Go for it.
Oscar Pistorius.
Yes! Oh, Gemma's in a commanding lead now.
No, don't say that. I'm gonna like spaff it somehow.
Spaff it?
Do you know, I was looking the other day when I was doing some research and Paddy Power printed an Oscar prediction thing.
Yeah.
And the printing was, and they got taken, it was the most complaint thing of all time. It was, we will pay out if Oscar walks.
That's dark. That is shady.
Wow. So bad.
My stomach just dropped.
I know. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
So what's the scores? Gemma's winning.
Mark, you and I are on one. Gemma's way out in the lead on three.
She's on three?
Yep.
Fuck.
But she's Gemmapedia, remember? Yeah. She's like, that's how
don't
she got in.
Say that
that's,
out
how,
loud.
That's how she got on the show, by having this encyclopedic knowledge of us. She's basically a stalker.
Yeah.
I know, isn't it fun?
God damn.
So it's my turn. So my second question. What was my first ever rewatch choice?
Oh, fuck.
That's way hard.
It's not really. I know the
Mark,
answer. Go on.
Catwoman.
You're locked out. Oh. Why the hell would I choose something gash as Catwoman?
I think it might have been the first one you did, but not the first
one
you picked.
It wasn't. Not my selection, no. So, Ben.
Crikey.
That's a tough question. Some fans will be screaming right now.
It will be.
I'm going to go with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I'm afraid it's incorrect.
Oh, shit.
So my choice, my first ever choice, was Natural Born Killers.
Oh, oh yeah. Of course
that's
it was.
A great choice.
Balls.
That's when you used to put effort in. Oh.
Do you remember those days? I don't.
That's funny, Mark. What time did you come to the episode today?
Shut up. Right next.
Technically, Gemma, it was a day late as well, because we were supposed to record yesterday.
Very
but,
true.
You know.
All right. Thank God I'm editing this episode.
Are you ready for the third one? My
yes.
third one.
I think so.
On episode 86, we listed our best and worst films of 2017. What did I pick as my
Gemma.
Worst?
Gemma. Ghost in the Shell.
Correctamundo.
Yay!
Bastard.
You picked it too, so you should
I
have
did,
known that.
Yeah.
Bastard. That's a great one.
Oh, the film wasn't.
Are you ready? I'm not going to tell you what episode because it'll help. And Ben surprised me with the sex tape stuff.
Okay.
Who am I describing? The only roles he should be given are cheese rolls.
Oh, shit. Oh my God, that could be a myriad of people.
Oh. I'm going to have a go, Ben.
Go for it.
Kevin James.
So close, but so far.
Oh my. So, big actors.
big actors. Give her the countdown. I got
I'm
the
gonna,
countdown.
I'm going to. I was giving it a couple more seconds then. Yeah. 5, 4, 3.
Gemma.
Go for it.
Oh, you said he. I was going to say Rebel Wilson, but you said he.
Nope.
Never mind.
Josh Gad.
Oh, yeah. Because of your inexplicable hatred towards Josh Gad.
Which has
yeah.
gone now.
Yeah.
I like him again.
Do you?
Like James Why? Corden. Well, I don't like them, but I'm not going to pick on them each time.
James Corden, let's go off on a tangent at the minute. I know you don't love James Corden so much. I've kind of warmed to him because I've been watching quite a bit of his talk show. Did you see his Carpool Karaoke with Paul McCartney?
It was amazing.
It was absolutely
I've not
the
seen
best
it.
25
phenomenal.
Minutes ever.
Really?
Gemma, it was amazing. When you see like Paul McCartney do this impromptu gig in a dinky little pub in Liverpool,
it's phenomenal.
It's brilliant.
He sings Hey Jude. He's there talking about his dad. He starts crying.
Yeah.
Everything's amazing.
Watch it. It's spectacular.
I think if I was ever in a pub and he started singing Hey Jude, I'd probably burst out in tears.
It's amazing. All the people are just having their little casual drinks and suddenly the curtain goes back on the jukebox and the whole band come on.
Oh.
Paul McCartney looks like the coolest guy in the world as well.
He's great, isn't he?
Went to his old house. It's well good.
Oh,
there's a skip to recommend.
There you go.
And it's the first time you've ever complimented James Corden.
Wow. I've only said Paul McCartney was really good. I really liked the way it was filmed. But yeah, it was great.
So my third question. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Since joining the podcast, there has been one segment that I missed due to an aviation malfunction.
Ben.
Go on.
I want to say it was the review of Thor.
You got it right. Well done. Yes! Well done. I was going to say, can you remember which film I didn't get the chance to review? Thor Ragnarok.
One of our best reviews.
My
I'm joking,
goodness.
I love you.
My
we genuinely
goodness.
Missed you.
We did. Aww.
But we did all right.
But we proved that we can do it without you.
And remember what happened when we got to 50? Adam left and you came on episode 100. Yeah. Let's see what happens.
There you go.
Bye.
Hint, hint.
Yeah, bye. Wow.
Right, this one's going to be a little bit tricky, but I'm going to help you in a bit, right?
I'm all right with that.
So for this one, you're going to need to give me an episode number.
Oh, fuck off.
I know, okay. I know. Okay. But you don't need to give me the exact number. I will give you a leeway of 5 episodes either side.
Okay.
So as long as you're in the ballpark, you get the point. Okay. On which episode did I introduce the feature Skip to the Recommend?
Gemma.
Go on, Gemma.
Episode 53?
Locked out. Mark.
63.
It was 68, so you're bang on the
yes!
five line. You just get the point. Well done, Mark.
God, that seems so long ago.
I know.
Amazing.
Wowzers.
You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which film did I pick for my 2003 Skip Back in Time? And to help you, it's a stupid choice.
That could
Ben.
Be a, that'd be so many things.
Go for it.
The Room.
He's correct.
Yes!
Yes!
And I do not change that. I still believe it was the best that year. Oh, come on, Gem.
Okay.
Do you want to know the scores before Gemma
goes? Please,
me and you are equal, aren't we?
No.
No,
what?
No, you're not.
Gemma's in the lead on 4. I'm right behind her on 3, and you're carrying the lead. Not carrying anything. You're right at the back on 2.
It's like a weird quizzy kind of human centipede.
But I can still catch up. That's
yeah.
A good thing.
Yeah.
You could.
God damn.
So, question 4. There is an actor I regularly have trouble pronouncing correctly.
Ben. Seth Rogen.
Oh, my God. I was going to say, rather than say his correct name, how do I pronounce it?
Oh, shit myself.
Sorry, I'm really sorry. And I didn't lock out, so I do apologise.
Fuck!
But I'm going to be civil.
Surely I get to have a go now.
No, I'm going to be civil because I'm going to give Ben half a point for
what?
That. because you did get the person's name right, but I think half a point is fair.
But if Mark gets the correct answer, he gets half as well.
Yes.
So go on, Mark.
Rather than say his correct name, how do I pronounce it?
Rogen.
You also get half a point.
Okay,
there we
go.
Right. Okay.
Right, probably just both have a point.
No.
Oh. Ben, it helps us beat her.
Oh, shit, yes.
Although, if I get some of these wrongs, then you're slightly ahead of me.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
This is tight as a gnat's chuff at the minute. But this is hard.
Okay.
On episode 52, we redid our top 5 films of all time, and I only made one change. I took out Goodfellas, and I added What?
Oh, my.
I'm going to give you a clue. I'm going to be nice to you.
Oh, what?
Okay.
It's an animated film.
Ben.
You said
Mark.
You said my name.
I was looking at your eyes. Okay. Surely it was quicker.
Oh my god.
I know it.
I can't, but I said Gemma.
You're not quicker. Your name is Mark.
I was quicker though.
Doesn't matter how quick you were. You said my name.
Oh my god. That happened.
Holy Christ, Gemma.
So, Spirited Away.
It is Spirited Away.
Bastard. My mind was focusing.
You said it with such conviction. Ben.
Plot twist, that's my real name. Gemma's going to win, bastard.
Oh, she deserves it after that.
Are you ready for my final one?
Oh, I suppose so.
Gemma and Ben. Are you ready?
I think so.
I've referred to this film as a masterpiece, but also the film I will watch when I'm feeling depressed.
And Ben. Big.
He's got it.
Well done.
And I was about to say, and my most watched film of all time.
Wow.
Good work.
Thank you.
You know me very well.
I know.
Know him so much you've decided to adapt his name.
Yeah.
So I've got the last question of the game.
Right, hold on. So this is the last question of the game.
It is.
You're on 5.
I am.
And I'm on 4.5.
Oh,
so if I get this right, I win.
Do I let him?
Yeah.
But he just took the mick out of me.
Who do you like more?
God, there's a lot of pressure now.
Right, okay. So the fifth and final question from me. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
On our Christmas special, 2016 Christmas special, which drink inspired...
White Russian.
He's got it!
Oh!
Which drink inspired from the rewatch we were discussing got us extremely pissed?
And Gemma was throwing up in the car.
Well, I mean, I was going to say pics or it never happened, but you do have a pic of me throwing up.
Yes.
So, yes, I did.
Check Instagram next week.
You fucker.
Wow, that was tight as all fuck. So I win with 5.5.
Well done.
And Gemma had 5. To be fair, you gave me that half when I shouldn't have had it because I got it wrong. So how about this, Gemma? Let's say you and I are joint winners.
I'm up for that.
And Mark's the loser.
Hooray!
Yeah?
Loser. But if I don't even know my name, surely I'm a winner.
No, it doesn't work like that.
You're a special boy. I don't know about a winner.
I've just thought, guys,
what's
it's
that?
Episode 100.
Yeah?
What should we do for our next quiz?
Oh, I don't know. Any thoughts?
I've not got much time this week, so should we just half-heartedly bring one of the old ones back?
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Done.
It's that time of the show where we give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. Skip to the recommend. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too. Marky Mark, I'm looking at you. What is your recommendation this week?
It's a Biffy Clyro album.
Oh.
MTV Unplugged. Do you remember back in the day when bands used to put effort in?
Yeah.
And you could put on MTV and there was actually music on.
Yeah.
Not Geordie Shaw and some bunch of wankers taking selfies.
Yep.
MTV Unplugged is back. I remember Alice in Chains.
Nirvana,
so iconic. Pearl Jam. Biffy have done it justice. I think stepping up now into that kind of iconic show and delivering the goods is not easy. I've just bought the album. It comes with the DVD, which is great. DVD, I thought was a bit shit, actually. I wanted a Blu-ray or something in HD, but it sounds phenomenal. The band have stripped back all their songs. They don't just play the mellow stuff that's made for radio. They send... There's stuff like Mountains on there and Bubbles and all the tracks. And I think it's stripped down. They've got a cello player. They've got an additional guitarist. They've got some strings, piano. And it sounds phenomenal.
That sounds the opposite of stripped down. That seems like they've bulked up. But they've got about 10 new musicians.
They've not got a full drum kit.
They've turned into an orchestra.
They've not got too much going on. They've stripped it down in the fact that there's less harmonies and just really stripped the songs down to their purest form. And the crowd are all standing. So I think it was filmed in London. And what they did is they played on the stage very much like Nirvana. The three of them, there's like a tree in the background. It looks gorgeous. But I've just been listening to the album in the car this week. It sounds so good. Simon's really worked his ass off making sure that these songs basically transcribe well, because you could do it and just try and keep playing the same as the song way. And I just think that would suck ass. But this is amazing. The crowd do all the harmonies. You know, like Biffy Clyro do a lot of whoa. Mm-hmm. They let the crowd do it.
Yeah.
The acoustics in that building is amazing. It's so, so well done. And I've just enjoyed those songs and fallen in love with them in a deeper way than I loved anyway. And the best thing is they cover The Beach Boys, God Only Knows.
Oh, lovely.
One of the greatest songs
which he has tattooed on his chest.
Yep.
And I think it's a big song for him. He lost his mom. He's had a lot of stuff in his life. And it's one of his favourite songs. And it's him on his own. And the rest of the band haven't even heard him perform it. And at the end, the bassist turns around to him and you hear it on the recording going, well done, Simon. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. You know how much that song's meant to him. It's a beautiful performance, but... I always worry now when they bring these things back. Now, next week, we'll have One Direction Unplugged or something like that.
Oh, that'd be good.
We would like Corey Unplugged.
Mate.
Unplugged and undrugged. Imagine that.
Corey doesn't do drugs.
No.
He's too much of a, professional. Yeah.
But honestly, it's great. And the good thing is, they've just announced they're touring it.
Now, am I right in thinking that you and Scott Plus One Higgins are going to see them live touring this in Gay Paris?
We are.
Yeah.
Yes, in September. We couldn't get tickets because it's sold out over here in about 10 seconds.
Oh, it sounds like a romantic break for you guys.
But you saw Biffy Clyro.
I'm so pleased for them.
Yes, we're going to get engaged.
Oh, you guys.
But you were at Download last year, and
indeed.
I think you saw one or two songs before you went off. Did you not see any of it?
No, I went to Rob Zombie.
Did you not even see one song?
No, I like good music. Oh, burn.
Well, you like Guns N' Roses this year.
They were all right. Yeah, I did enjoy them.
I'm still going to get in with that. But yeah, it's a great album. You know, for £10 you get the album and a DVD, which is amazing.
Mm.
And the vinyl's out.
Yeah.
Invest in it, because they're one of the best bands.
Do they not have Blu-ray in Scotland?
I don't think they do. Not yet. Coming soon. VHS.
They have Iron Blu-ray.
Mic drop. That's it for this episode.
Love it.
Brilliant. It's well worth your money.
There's a picture of Biffy Clyro floating around where they look like the three stages of James McAvoy's film career.
Yeah, I've seen it. Twitter's doing the rounds. It's good.
Excellent.
But anyway, if you don't want to listen to The Unplugged and you think it's too mellow, go and listen to their other albums, because they're one of the best bands on the planet.
Fantastic.
Done.
How many times have you seen them live?
59.
It's mental.
Really?
That is mental.
Genuinely.
Paris will be number 60.
Jesus Christ.
So I'm going to get engaged. I'm going to be in Paris to another man and see him for my 60th time.
Have you told your wife about any of this? Of
course not.
Oh, my.
Did Michael Barrymore tell his wife about what was going on?
Probably not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, on that note...
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Gemma,
that's
the bingo.
He's not a pedo, but it counts, I think,
yes.
The bingo.
Someone's now at home shouting, house. Go for it, Gem.
Okay, so how do I recover from this? I'll tell you what, I'm going for a puppet web sitcom called Blark and Son.
Called what now?
Blark and Son.
Blark?
B-L-A-R-K.
Wow.
Is it like a spin-off of Paul Blart Mall Cop?
Sadly not.
I'd love that.
Shame.
That would be another recommendation for another time. But UK viewers can watch this absolutely free of charge on Tumblr. And overseas viewers can watch it via Instagram on go90.com. But on Instagram, they also have quick clips of the show. So, this show is created by Ben Bayouth, and it stars not just him, but Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
McLovin.
McLovin.
Oh.
As Blark and Son, respectively. So Bayouth plays Blark, the dad, and Mintz Plasse plays the son. And it's about the life of a father and son living together. Blark is a dad that wants his son to be proud of him, whereas son just wants to play computer games with his Eastern European online friend and for his dad to stop barging in his room. I know, right? Real life. The puppets are designed in a rather animated way. So you notice that their eyes are almost bulging out of their eye sockets and their mouths are very pronounced and quite creepy when you see them. But the story, it's 8 minutes, 7-8 minutes, Mark.
Sold.
His little face just lit up.
Little face.
Yeah, so because of this design, Sun looks constantly gormless and Blark looks like a faded man's man whose only mission in life is to seek approval from his young kid. The voice guest appearance include Patton Oswalt.
Oh, yes.
Jim Rash.
Yeah.
Justin Roiland. Donald Faison and Deborah Baker Jr. And it's been hailed as the new modern way to watch sitcoms from creative people. So with TV shows, you automatically have this invested group of people that are going to watch it. Whereas something like Instagram or Tumblr, that takes time. You've got to try and build up a base full of people that are going to sit down and watch these particular episodes. But it works. It's hilarious. It's a free way to watch this show. It's odd, but it's also very, very funny. And I'm sure people that do watch it are going to identify either as the father or either as the son, or even both if you're that kind of person. But it's just 7-8 minutes of just silliness. It's funny. It's really out there. And Justin Roiland's character as the next door neighbor's little kid, he doesn't say a lot, but the facial expressions of this puppet is just, it's so hilarious. It splits my side every time he comes onto the screen.
Does he sound like Rick, though, from Rick and Morty, when you hear him
but
talk?
Like, yeah. A really sort of stretched Rick. Like, kind of, oh, it's brilliant. Please do check it out. It's so funny. And it's a great way to support up-and-coming animation.
Yeah, I like the way that this platform is. Yeah, yeah, it's good.
I will check it out, but I'm kind of torn on this whole thing about how people can now create shows and put them on the internet and stuff. On one hand, it's great. It's democratic. It means everyone has access to do these things. But it also means there's no quality control. It just means there's a whole heap of shit out there that no one should ever see. And I'm not saying this I'm sure this is brilliant, Jammer, on your recommendation.
Yeah.
But it's that democracy of ability to do these things that has given us a podcast. Yeah. So I can't be too annoyed by it.
My favourite episode is when Blark, the dad, decides to keep his son at home and do school because the son all of a sudden has kind of this hero worship of his teacher at school. Mm. So the dad gets jealous and decides to build an entire school out of cardboard in their own home, and he plays these number of teachers to try and make the kid look like him a lot more. But it's so funny. Definitely worth it.
7 minutes, I'm sold.
Yeah.
I'll give it a go. Come on then, Ben, what have you got?
Watch it when I'm having a poo.
a poo.
I really wish I had something fun. I hate going last because I'm too hungry.
He's got Hitler's diaries.
It's not far off, to be fair. So I've got a book called A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. It's a revisionist history book chronicling the life of the USA from 1492, when Columbus first landed in the Americas, to 2005, when the most recent version of this book came out. And Zinn's thesis statement, really, is that history is told from the point of view of the conquerors and the governments that spring up after conquest and subjugation. So what Zinn seems to do, or aims to do, is he wants to reframe American history by telling it from the point of view of the people who were conquered, subjugated, and ruled, which is kind of out there. It's not something people were doing before that. So he opens the book telling the story of Columbus, but not from the point of view of the explorer, but from the point of view of the people that he conquered, the Arawak Indians who he found in the Bahamas. You know, he slaughtered them and enslaved them. And then in the course of a few decades, the Arawak Indians were no more. It was effectively a genocide. But of course, history books at that time, and still to a degree at this point, paint Columbus as being a hero. Mm-hmm. He's an adventurer who, you know, discovered America, rather than the fact that he was essentially a pirate who destroyed a generation. Mm. And when Zinn did this, it was kind of a kick in the dick to the establishment. People didn't like this. People like doing things in certain ways. You know, people were so used to this idea that Columbus was an adventurer. He wasn't there to plunder gold from Asia. But this is the thing. You realise why Native Americans are called Indians, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's because Columbus thought he was in Asia. He thought when he landed he was in India, so he called them Indians. Like, no, fuckwit. You got it entirely wrong. You're in the Americas, you know. And it's very honest about this kind of stuff. And that's what he looks to do through this whole book. He looks how wars, revolutions, societal changes affected people. Affected the citizens on the ground rather than the governments and the monarchs who ruled them. In the interest of balance, some people don't like this book. They don't like Zinn's work. They think that perhaps he took single sources as evidence of whole things. They think he kind of used his own biases. I've not found that in this, but I'm open to that argument. But it has made a massive change in America, especially. This book now, when it was first published in 1980, since then, it is now required reading in a lot of schools, high schools, colleges. So people are starting to come around to his way of thinking, looking at history from the people who are under the thumb rather than the people driving the thumb down. It's an absolutely fascinating book, and it's one that all people should read, not just Americans, but if you have any interest in history and the truth of history, the truth of why we are where we are, read this book, A People's History of the United States by the late Howard Zinn.
Wow.
I'll never read it.
I told you it was too serious, didn't I?
I know. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Can social media save us right now, Ben? Because that's a bit too deep.
Sorry.
Next time being like Beavis and Butthead or something.
Might really have to. Love a bit of B&B. Skip to the recommend then. On Facebook, Carmel Murphy has said, Imagine Dragons' Evolve World Tour, one of the most entertaining things I've ever experienced. It's not particularly hot in Melbourne in May, but he did the whole gig shirtless, and who am I to question why?
Wow.
I don't really know much of their work, to be honest.
They did Radioactive. They did a few. They've done
You'll
some
know them
songs.
If you heard the songs. Yeah. They're doing very well.
They're quite big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any good?
Yeah.
I'm actually not...
They're
all right. Yeah, give it a go.
Is it kind of radio-friendly type stuff?
I would say so.
It is, but it's all right. It's done very well.
Mm. Fair enough. On Twitter, Kieran at Chunky Redbeard has said, Prescription Thugs on Netflix. Heard about it on Steve Austin's podcast. It's an enlightening documentary about the pharmaceutical industry and how it affects and manipulates people's lives without them realising. And it contains interviews with wrestlers and regular folks.
Oh, my Lord.
But that's really heavy.
Yeah, man. I'm all over that. That sounds amazing. Old friend of the podcast on Facebook, Lyndon Wells, has said, Peter Jackson and the Making of Middle-Earth by Ian Nathan. It's a book that's a must-read for any fan of the complete process of filmmaking. The book highlights how they got everything so right for Lord of the Rings, but then everything so wrong for the lackluster Hobbit trilogy. And then Lyndon has said, a great read, even if you don't like Lord of the Rings, and I don't understand why anyone wouldn't. I'll tell you why, Lyndon. Because it's tedious garbage. But the book sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a film about walking. That's all it is. Yeah. It's literally a walking
film. Dwarves walking up a hill.
But yeah. I've never seen the Hobbit films.
Shouldn't have to.
Quite happy to say that.
Yeah.
But I do like the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Shame.
A lot.
On Twitter, 20-word movie reviews at 20wordmr. He said, I know you guys like your movie soundtracks, and we do. We've been talking about Ennio Morricone today. Yeah. So I'd recommend checking out a few Max Richter albums. He did the music for Arrival, Hostiles, and The Leftovers TV show, and many others. His albums Memory House and The Blue Notebooks in particular are masterpieces.
I adore Arrival's score. I think it's such a beautiful, haunting melody. I definitely want to check that out.
Yeah, and as you know, I'm a huge fan of The Leftovers. Mm-hmm. And again, the word you've just used is perfect. Haunting.
Yeah.
Haunting score. So yeah, I'll check that out for sure. On Facebook, Clive Bullock has said, Monster Magnet. Saw them touring their new album, Mindfucker. If you like your music heavy with amazing lyrics, check it out.
Now, great band.
I am a huge fan of Monster Magnet. I've been into them for 20-odd years, I would say. I've never seen them live. However, I did have a ticket to see them live in 2006. I was going to see them live in Sheffield. And a couple of days before the gig, the whole European tour got cancelled because the lead singer, Dave Windorf, overdosed on heroin.
Shit.
And I wasn't even bothered. I was like, yeah, that's metal.
Yeah.
It doesn't get much more metal than that.
That's mental. But they are a great band.
Fucking rule. And Mindfucker is a great record as well.
That's so a check great it recommendation. Out.
Yeah. On Instagram, Stuart, aka StuPick44, has said, and Gemma, you're going to agree with this, Atlanta is the best thing on TV right now.
Hell yeah.
What a statement.
Yeah, it's a bold statement, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's got Lando in it, hasn't it?
Yeah, Donald- that's his actual name.
That's his real name. But I've heard great things.
Yeah, you should check it out. Yeah. I'm kind of lukewarm on season two. It's got a bit too dark for me. But season one I thought was exceptional. Gemma?
Superb. Absolutely fantastic. And yeah, Donald Glover really can do no wrong. He's an exciting individual.
This is
a great show.
He's the king. On Facebook, Avril Luke has said, I'm listening to an album Snow by Angus and Julia Stone. Not what I'd usually go for, but my daughter loves it and persuaded me to try it.
I thought you were going to really please Benny then and say Snow Patrol. Because you know what he's like.
He's never not listening to Snow Patrol.
He is probably the biggest snowy I've known.
Yeah.
Snowy, that's what they're called. Number one,
not
Snowy.
Not Patroller.
That and Shed 7, he's all over.
And Cooler Shaker.
Oh my God. Mate. Benny and Cooler Shaker is like peanut butter and jam.
That's why he didn't come to Download, because he went to the Cooler Shaker convention, didn't
Cooler
he?
Cooler Fest. Yeah, Cool Fest.
Cool Con.
Yeah, it's really good.
Sorry, Benny. So Angus and Julia Stone are an Australian folk duo, apparently. I'm not familiar, but we've started to get a lot of communication from our Australian listeners.
Yeah,
so,
a lot.
You know,
hi.
Good day. Yeah. Don't be drongos or galahs.
Yeah, just remember to put another shrimp on the barbie.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Something
that's racist, actually, Gemma.
Is it?
You're stereotyping. Get out.
Something that go down under.
What the fuck?
Next, save us.
On Facebook, Jamie Ward Brown said, I'll give a shout out to 2014 Spring. A lot of films claim to be genre bending, but Spring is one of the few that actually achieves it. It's a horror slash romance, something that shouldn't work, but completely does here. Think David Cronenberg meets Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise.
I've seen it. It's mental. I love it. It's shot in such a unique way. It has this filter on it. It's mad. You need to see it. Watch it. You'd actually enjoy it, dude.
Okay, sounds fascinating.
The poster's great as well.
Excellent.
Let's give that a go. On Twitter, Scott Tucker at S77Tux. What better way to accompany a film at home than with a craft beer and snacks? Therefore, I recommend Koei Kai Nori's wasabi-coated peanuts and Walker's Max Strong wasabi. Playfully spicy and very tasty.
Playfully spicy. I love it.
He bloody loves wasabi, doesn't he, Scott?
I can't eat that. It's too spicy
really?
For me. I'm a pussy.
Oh, no. Wasabi's nice.
But if Walkers want to send us some to try on the episode, I'm well up for that.
Or the Thailand-based company Koei Kai Nori. Yeah. We'll take that as well.
That's Koei Kai Nori.
Yes.
And then finally on Facebook, Daniel Sturton, Mark, he apparently saw you performing live at Wembley on Friday.
Oh, fuck off.
Ed Sheeran.
This is why I couldn't record on Saturday, because I was tired from that big sellout gig.
But he said it was a great gig.
Do you know what? Even though he's rubbish and I wouldn't buy his albums, I've got to respect the fact that he can go on stage with a guitar and he can sell out this stadium 5-6 nights. Fair play to the guy. Do you know what?
Yeah. And let's be honest, right? He's got chicks hanging off his arm, left, right and centre. So more power to the man.
Yeah. But I am still sat here, dude. If people want to recommend stuff for episode 100, what would you do?
Sorry, I'm still laughing at about you looking like Ed Sheeran. They can get us on all of our social media outlets, of course. Twitter at STTE Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or old school email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. And I know you shouldn't pat yourselves on the back, but I'm going to do it. That was a good one. Good one. And the worry is that episode 100 is going to be shit in comparison. I think we've set too high a bar on 99.
Should we, and I'm being serious now, I know we mess around, but should we just call it a day now? Because I think that's a good one to go out on. Yeah. I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a nice one to, 99's a nice one to round it off.
Yeah.
It just feels right.
Exactly. Just leave them wanting more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
99.
So, thank you, everyone. Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. We want to be CM Punk retiring at the top. Yeah. We don't want to be Ric Flair coming out of retirement every 2 minutes.
There we go. Yeah. One more. Let's do one more.
Should we do one more?
One more.
Let's do one more and then play it by ear.
Yeah.
Let's not make any promises.
So we won't do any competitions. We won't announce the next rewatch. We just see how it goes and how we feel.
Oh, man. Let's tell them what we got coming up on episode 100, though. It's going to be a biggie. Mark, what's our topic?
Our topic is, I'm trying to think how to word it, basically your top three moments that ruined a film.
Yeah.
Should we say that?
Sounds good. Yeah,
For an example, if you watch let's not give an example.
No, don't give an example.
But
basically, when you're sat there and you're watching a good film, the best way to put it is, it's a pretty good film. Everything's going right.
Yeah.
One thing, it could be a scene, an actor, an actress, something happens and you're furious and you hate it and you want to burn it and you never want to watch it ever again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Done.
That'll do.
Oh, I can't wait for that one.
Rant
time. Gemma, what's our main film?
We're going to be reviewing Sicario 2, otherwise known as Soldado.
Yeah.
We were big fans of the first one, weren't we?
Huge.
So we're a little bit worried we're going to get burned on this one.
The reviews are phenomenal.
Really?
Five stars across the board.
Is that right? I've not read any yet.
Yeah.
Look what happened with Hereditary.
That's true. That was also 5 stars across the board, and that was garbage.
And the main review that really matters is our review.
Yeah,
so stick around.
Stick around for that. And our rewatch is, I don't know, because it's up to you good people out there in listener land. As I say, get your tweets in, your Instagrams, your Facebook posts, your emails, and let us know what you think our rewatch should be for episode 100. And then I will pick a winner on Tuesday, the 3rd of July.
I'm so scared.
Imagine if it's like Mac and Me again.
Oh, fuck's sake.
But if it is a bad film, does it matter? Because who are we masturbating over?
That's true.
The former child actor, the greatest actor in the history of film.
Guaranteed. Mm-hmm.
Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman. Be part
the
of the Feld fam.
The next 2 weeks, guys, you can basically sit at home watching all his back work.
And how's that different to my normal life?
Exactly. Yeah. So they just picking one, Ben.
Yeah.
I don't think we should have to do it, but we're going to have to.
Hashtag preserve innocence. That's all I'm going to say.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be huge. We've also got a quiz, but we're not going to tell them what it is, are we?
Nope.
An old favourite, I
think. Shouldn't
have to. We'll just have a look and see what we'll pick an old one.
Yeah, we'll pick an old one.
Go in the archives.
I think listeners should speculate. Send us some tweets.
Yeah. We're not
speculating.
What you'd like.
What you'd like to see us do.
And we'll make sure it's not that one.
Because we're cunts. Oops. First time I've said that, I think, is it? Oh, I don't know.
Oh, do you know what as well?
What?
I know I build it up, but we're going to give away the biggest amount of prizes we've ever given away. Because, God, haven't we? It's episode 100.
Yeah, woo! Big time.
Huge prizes. I'm talking. I know one of them already. I'm not joking. It's fucking awesome.
Have you got like a lockup full of tat that you haven't been able to get rid of for 4 years?
But, like, storage hunters. Yeah, like- you get a guy to, like, start selling it.
Here's a pen with the boss on it. Sorry, Universal, but that was shite.
Plenty of those coming. Yes. Going next week. Oh, man. I'm warm, I'm tired, but I'm happy. I need a rest. See you in 2 weeks.